What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
And the mechanical stem as well, so...
Everybody was missing the mechanical cup, obviously.
Yeah.
You're delighted. Training starts on the 8th of December.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
7:30 Friday morning, if we're welcoming along to OTB AM. Adrian here, and we've given Owen the week off because we've had an upgrade. Hannah Turrell, good morning to you.
Morning, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, and thanks a million for coming into the studio as well. Dublin footballer, former Ireland star, there's the list as long as your arm, and including former footballer as well, soccer player, that is.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, but that was my first love. I started playing soccer when I was about 6 or 7, and I transferred to other sports from there.
And you played WNL for a bit, did you?
Yeah, so when the Women's National League started up in 2012, I moved from my original club, St Catharines, who weren't awarded a place in the Women's National League, to Shamrock Rovers and played there for the inaugural season. So it was a great experience. Really, really enjoyed it and obviously played with some phenomenal footballers.
And when you say your first love, was that at that time, were you like, this is the path I want to go and I love this game and...
It was the only sport growing up that I played until about 13 when I was in secondary school and I started playing Gaelic football. You know, I was just introduced to that by a couple of friends. But growing up, you know, I was a diehard Man United supporter,
right,
constantly out in the streets kicking a football and playing with my local club. And yeah, I loved soccer. I was absolutely mad about it. Went everywhere with a football. And at that time, I didn't realise, you know, that potentially that could be a career for me, you know, and I moved away from that when Gaelic came along, and I very quickly got into a Dublin setup and Gaelic took over from there, really.
What did you get into the rugby at?
Not till I was 23.
Right.
Yeah, I was a lot older again, playing with Dublin a very long time then, and rugby sevens had been introduced into the Olympics, and a friend who I knew through Gaelic football, who was playing rugby with Old Belvedere, kind of mentioned, like, I think you'd be pretty decent at rugby if you wanted to give it a go, and I think you might be a good sevens player. And turns out she was right, decent.
Yeah, listen, I think you can say that with some confidence. Well, and it was like, it's a bit of a cliche, but like, was there stuff from those sports that stood to you in the other ones, or?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think, in terms of soccer, the instep pass that comes very naturally to a lot of soccer players has immensely been immensely useful for me in my Gaelic career and obviously in rugby as well. But yeah, look, when you play lots of different sports, I think they definitely transfer over, and footwork and kicking transfers from rugby and GAA, and it worked quite well for me to transition over. You know, my very first game of rugby, I remember I was thrown on a full back in a, I think it was like a Division 2 game or something like that, and my thoughts were just run away from everybody,
right.
Don't get tackled, and that worked for me.
It's
for
good instinct in rugby, it turns out.
It worked for me for a few years, so I can't complain.
We've the match programme here, obviously, and we should talk, we'll come back to your own career in a second, but just we should talk a little bit obviously about events last night. I was out there at the game, and it was very like the record ticket sold, I think is how they're phrasing it. I think there was a lot of people on the night, maybe between COVID and the coldness last night, because it was absolutely freezing out there, maybe stayed away. But just in terms of what happened on the pitch, there was so much positivity built up between the Australia game into the Sweden game despite the result, and obviously from Helsinki then after that. And last night just felt like a bit of a sucker punch almost. We were supposed to go out. Emma Byrne was telling us, we did a social show for an hour before the game, and Emma was predicting 4-0. We had Dora Gorman, she was predicting 2-0. Everybody, and that wasn't at odds with everything else that was going on, and just the performance of the outcome last night, not what everybody wanted.
Yeah, look, I think the girls themselves will know they're a little bit disappointed and passed up an opportunity to get all 3 points. But as you said, unfortunately, the performance on the night didn't warrant the 3 points. And, you know, it seemed like a very, very physical game. Slovakia were putting in some, you know, crunching tackles at times, maybe tipping the line on or tiptoeing the line on legality in some of them. But I suppose I felt like Heather Payne was quite isolated up top at times, you know, and was working really, really hard as she has done the last few games, but probably just couldn't get up there enough to support her and get on the end of things. And yeah, final ball sometimes just couldn't get in there. And like, personally myself, you know, Kate McCabe's one of the best players, is probably our best player that we have right now, and she just we're playing her too deep. And I wonder, is that just from, you know, lack of players to slot in elsewhere, you know? And Vera Powell kind of set up a little bit defensively in her setup with her three centre backs and then kind of two wing backs there. But for me, Kate McCabe, we need her at the other end of the pitch. She's a wicked left foot and can do so many things, as we saw with the goal last night. And it's unfortunate because, as you said, there was a hype really building up there for the girls. You know, they'd put in some great performances, but on international level, you need to be consistent. You know, one or two performances like that isn't good enough and it's not going to get you qualifying. And I definitely think this squad is good enough to qualify for a World Cup.
The disappointment of it was that of all the games last night, because you would have understood against Australia, against Sweden and away in Helsinki to a lesser degree, but you would have understood why we would want to play a certain way. But last night, the opportunity might have been there to push Katie up the pitch a bit, to be a bit more adventurous in her style and her play. And like, maybe that's the most disappointing thing, because like, if we'd gone for it and it had ended up 1-1, then at least we would have said, well, look, maybe that's not for us. Or, but we leave it with a sense of actually what might have been. And when we went at the game, like I said earlier, we were right at it. And the analysis of it afterwards, even last night, and like reading some of the papers this morning, is it the way they're set up? Is it individual errors? What's your take on where that sits?
I don't know. I think, as you mentioned, it was a very defensive setup, and I don't know if that was because maybe a lack of other attacking options up there. You know, Rhianna Jarrett wasn't even included in the squad. Mm. Leanne Kiernan was missing through injury, and I do think if Kiernan had been available, she may have started, but she definitely would have been a great impact sub to bring on and kind of run through some tired legs up top. But I don't know, like, these are chances and opportunities we need to be taking. And I don't know if Vera Powell got it right on the night last night. You know, I definitely would have liked to see us push up a little bit more. But as you said, she mentioned one of her main tactics, if we're losing a game and chasing a game, is to throw Louise Quinn up top. Yeah. Like, you know, she's brilliant in the air. She'll always try to get on the end of things and kind of make a nuisance of herself. But she mentioned last night that she didn't throw her up for the last few minutes last night because she felt like we were not doing too well at the back and there was a chance of actually losing the game from it. So that was an interesting point. But for me, I think the game was there for us and we had to go for it. You know, you win games by taking risks sometimes, and that was probably the game we needed to take a risk on.
Yeah. She also, very interestingly, talking to Tony O'Donoghue after the game, was talking about the concession of the goal, and you know, we're going to talk to Stephanie Roach about it a little bit around, but she did really, it felt to me, watching it, I have to say, that it was a bit of a clang moment of sort of hanging out your best player to dry here, with saying, you know, you've left the organisation to go further up the pitch. She didn't name check her, it was pretty obvious she was talking about her, and then leaving that hole behind from where the goal came. But I mean, I think if you're Katie McCabe, is such a professional, and you see her in her interviews last night, she's never going to let that slip, even if it is gnawing away at her. But I do think in a private moment, Katie McCabe last night must be thinking, I mean, come on.
Yeah, look, and I think obviously that comes from Katie McCabe maybe wanting to be that attack-minded player and who's up there. But, you know, there's 11 players on a pitch. You know, Katie McCabe wasn't the one who lost the ball over the other side of the pitch to turn it over and set Slovakia up on the counter-attack. But yeah, look, I do hope that, you know, Katie can take that on the chin and not let it affect her for Georgia's game.
Yeah, we're going to hear from the manager now, get some reaction from the game last night with full commentary of the match live and off the ball last night. We're going to hear from the Talis Stadium, 1-1 draw with Slovakia. Nathan afterwards in conversation with Vera Powell.
We found it very difficult to keep the ball under pressure and to keep our structure under pressure. And their possessional play was so good that we also found it difficult to immediately win the ball back. So that gave a frantic look on the pitch. It was as if we needed to go against to wake up, or to let everything go, or to let the change go, or having the guts to go. At halftime, we've used some clips to show that there was constantly space on the other side. So we've done that better in the second half. We've switched play more often. And we could, with that, we could put more pressure forward.
That lack of control, particularly in the first half, of when you had possession of the ball, what do you put that down to?
Sorry?
The lack of control in the middle of midfield when you had possession of the ball, particularly in the first half. What do you think the reasons were behind that?
That they were very aggressive. And it was not only in midfield. In midfield there was an overload of plays. We knew also that. So we were playing on the side and then the pass after was lost. It was either kicked out or was half kicked, or the pressure was so high that it was put into the defence. And that's what we need to do better. We have to be honest to each other and to the outside world that needs to be better.
Yeah, like, it's very deflating, and 6 points were close to a must between this game and the Georgia game on Tuesday, and like, you feel that, I don't know, Hannah, like, your experience of being in a dressing room like that where the result that you'd wanted hasn't come off and you've got a result, obviously you've got a really important game now coming in a couple of days. What about, you know, that? Have you experienced that thing where you've been in that dressing room and like, you got to lift yourself over a couple of days?
Yeah, look, I think the good thing is that they do have a game in the next few days to kind of get over that and leave that draw behind them, you know. there's nothing they can do. Those points are gone, you know, and they can only focus on the next game. So I'm sure they'll have a rest day today, maybe a little bit of analysis, figure out what they can do better, you know, particularly to get more opportunities up front, and hopefully go out in Georgia and can kind of rectify some of those mistakes they made and show us the good, the talent that's available and you know, the good players, and kind of step up and get that result and try and get this campaign back on track. You know, all is not lost. There's still plenty of games to be played, but we just need a good performance that we know they're capable of against Georgia, and kind of get them back in that confidence frame of mind.
Yeah, we'll hear now from Emma Byrne. She was on co-commentary with Nathan last night, and here were her thoughts after full time.
Yeah, it was a real disappointing result, and you know, you can see the players are completely deflated. They weren't expecting it either, but more importantly for me, it was the overall performance that was a little bit disappointing. We were expecting more from Ireland. We were talking about them. This is a new era for women's football, and the standards have risen so much, but unfortunately we just didn't see that, and I think it's a little bit of a setback, to be quite honest.
It's not a fatal blow, because Ireland, if we're looking at it as a rivalry with Finland, are 2 points behind but with a game in hand. But this was, it felt, a must win for Ireland to really take advantage of the victory over in Finland. Katie McCabe got the goal. Ireland rarely got her involved again, stuck out in the left wing. The midfield had no control.
Well,
it felt
it.
Like a bit of a total systems breakdown.
Yeah, this is it. This for me was the big question mark, was over what were they trying to do tonight on the pitch. And when you've got a player like Katie McCabe on the pitch, you need to get the ball to her. Like, whenever you're on the ball, you need to be looking for her. And it didn't seem like that was happening, because when she did get on the ball further up the pitch, she created something. And, you know, it's just a shame, because I think it was a game tonight for switching play. It was a game tonight for keeping calm, keeping possession. And we didn't really do either of the three, to be quite honest. And that, for me, is the most disappointing part.
Yeah, Emma Byrne there in conversation with Nathan after the game last night. We've lots more reaction to that game coming up over the course of the show. We'll have Stephanie Roach and get her thoughts on exactly what happened last night and where to now for this Irish team. Obviously not too long to lick their wounds, because Tuesday is just around the corner and changes will have to happen. Heather Payne is on her way back to the US. She's got college commitments, so there will be at least one change to the team, and we'll talk to Stephanie about where she feels that might come, and plenty more as well upcoming on the show. I should mention as well, there's some breaking news from the world of golf this morning, and the Irish players that were due to tee it up at the Joburg Open have withdrawn from that due to the new strain of COVID that has emerged in South Africa. So there we go. It's going to be something, I think, that's looks like it's going to dominate the headlines, unfortunately, again for the next little while. Anna, talk to us a bit about, you were telling me off air that we were just talking about the transition of the GAA to the rugby side of things, but you've been dipping a little bit. I hope I'm not breaching any confidence now. I just realise as the words have come out of my mouth there, but you're back playing a little bit of club.
Yeah, look, obviously I retired from international rugby after the Six Nations this year, and unexpectedly immediately turned to intercounty with Dublin. But ever since the All-Ireland final, I went back to club with GAA, but I also went back to club with Old Belvedere for rugby, because over the past number of years I haven't got to play nearly as much club as I'd like, and you know, they were the ones who kind of helped me get into the Ireland setup, and it's nice to be able to back playing with friends you originally like had started with, and just giving back to the club a little bit, yeah, and enjoying the social side of rugby again.
You're the first one to mention that Ireland final, so I now feel as if I've the green light to chat away. But we had Brian Fenton on last week's show, and he was talking about that they hadn't as a group yet watched back the Mayo game, and they would do that at some point when they regather, I suppose early in the new year. What about you guys? Is that something you've looked back at, the Meath match? Or?
We had a post-match, we had an end-of-year kind of analysis, not just on the game itself, just right. on kind of the year as a whole and what we felt went well and what maybe needs some improvements for next year, and, you know, just a kind of a general chit-chat and catch-up. But in terms of watching the match back as a team, I don't know if that'll happen. I've watched it myself individually. Look, it's heartbreaking, you know, for me, having come in this year into a team that had won four in a row and, you know, had looked pretty good to get to an All-Ireland final, and to lose is it's a tough one to take, but just gives me a bit of hunger and hopefully the team a bit of hunger and desire to go back out there and win next year.
When you say it's heartbreaking, like, what's the bit that gnaws at you when you're watching that game back that you're saying, oh, if only?
The fact that we didn't perform as a team. You know, we didn't play the way we wanted to play, you know, and part of that you have to give credit to Meath for stopping us from playing the way we played, and you know, they were brilliant on the day. They all knew their roles down to a T and their setup was excellent, you know, and we just couldn't counteract that on the day. We couldn't adapt, and at the end of the day we did have chances, we just couldn't put the ball over the bar or put the ball in the net.
Do you sit alone and say, take a big deep sigh, press pause, get the cup of tea out and sit down? Is that how you go about that, or how did you?
For me, I'm one, I need to watch the match as soon as I can.
So we
went out and we enjoyed ourselves that night, but before going to bed I watched it.
Really?
Yeah,
right.
I just like to watch it just to see, and I'll watch it again and again over times, but just to watch it and get it through, it's always been the way I've done it. And yeah, it's just
so you can park it almost. Is
kind
that
of, yeah, right. Just to park it. But yeah, it's just for me, it's sad and it'll be a hard one to get over. Ever since I picked up a Gaelic football, I wanted to win a senior All-Ireland for Dublin. And you know, I'm still trying.
Yeah, and all the success obviously is there over the line. You certainly haven't taken away from the general dynamic, it should be said. You've really hit the ground running in an incredible way.
Yeah, well, I don't know, we didn't get the end result, and like, for me, part of that does try, and like, I'm like, was I part of the reason why we didn't win? You know, they'd been very successful without me, and that's kind of my own stuff that I have to try and park and deal with. But yeah, look, I really enjoyed my return, and the team were great at welcoming me back in and trying to kind of teach me the rules and the tactics they have and stuff, because it was a difficult adjustment from rugby, you know. And I just loved that Gaelic football has always come so naturally to me, and I just loved being back out there, and I was just really enjoying my football. That's all it was. And yeah, we got some nice results out of it until the end.
Yeah. When you said there that you were questioning whether your involvement had somehow taken away from the thing, my natural instinct was, you've had several Player of the Match awards over the course of the season, you won an All-Star at the end of it. It's hard to see that, but I do understand when everything is in the mix at the end of a season like that. I mean, but it's a great imponderable in some ways, and I'm absolutely certain, given the All-Star and given the awards, that any of your teammates or your manager, I'm sure, wouldn't have that thought. But maybe understandable that it crosses your mind on some level.
Yeah, look, it's hard not to. As I said, they'd won the last four All-Irelands in a row, you know, they seemingly looked unstoppable, and that's even coming from me on the outside. And then we come in this year and we seem to be doing really well, and we just can't get over the line in the final. But look, that most of that is down to me just playing very, very well, getting their tactics spot on. You know, they have some incredible players. They won eight All-Stars and probably could have had a few more. It's while it was very hard for us to take, it's great for ladies football to have increased competition, you know. And Meath have shown maybe other teams in the country who thought they had no chance of winning in All-Ireland, that it can be done, you know, and it's great for ladies football. It just, it wasn't great for me or Dublin this year.
Yeah, and it's very decent of you to say that it was that it is great for ladies football. I'm sure from where you're sitting at the minute, that's not an easy point to make. And Mick Bowen signed up again, I saw during the week, that another year.
Yeah, look, I'd have a lot of time for Mick. You know, he took me on this summer and kind of gave me an opportunity and gave me a couple of starts in the league, and it went from there. But I think he's an incredible coach. You know, he does a great job, and what he's done for Dublin football in general over the years has been brilliant. And I was very relieved to hear he was staying on, because I really do like working as part of his team. And I think the mental side of things that he's brought on, you know, before he came along, the Dublin ladies had lost 3 in a row, and then they went on to win 4 in a row. And if anyone's to pick up the pieces after last year, it'll be him, and he'll kind of have his own reasons for that. You know, he wouldn't want to go out losing an All-Ireland final, and he wants to try and win again next year. So it's great to have him on board in the backroom team that come with him.
Yeah, another competitive season of absolutely no doubt ahead as well, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, for the rest of us, it was a delight to watch Meath this year. I'm sorry, Hannah, it was. We really enjoyed it, and I'm sure that fed into the overall picture of things afterwards. I think it was the journey they'd been on, obviously, from all that transition over the last couple of years. Doesn't help you this morning, obviously, or previously as well. Right, it is 7:50. It's Friday morning. It's Adrian with you until 10, and Hannah Turrell alongside me in studio here as well. And we've a stacked show coming up. You are watching OTB AM. We're live with Gillette, who are proud sponsors of Movember. And apologies for the facial hair. Gentlemen, let's mow. There's only another 4 or 5 days to go, and nobody will be happier than me when the razor comes out on Tuesday. Ronan O'Gara, stand a bite. We'll talk to him in just a couple of moments' time. Plenty to talk to him about as well. Sean O'Hara, you might remember, if you were tuned in about 3 weeks ago, he was 4 marathons in to the 30 marathons over the course of Movember. And it is a really exceptional challenge to take on. He's heading into his 26th today. We'll catch up with Sean again at 8:10 this morning and find out exactly how the body is and how he's getting on. Alan Brogan is going to join us at 8:30. Much more Dublin football chat. Hannah will be delighted to hear. Stephanie Roach will pick through the bones of events at Tala last night at 8:50. John Duggan with the latest in the events of world and live and international and Irish sport this morning. And then some John Giles for you from the show last night. So that's what's coming up. Do keep your texts coming into us over the course of the morning. We're live on YouTube and all the usual spots as well. Ronan O'Gara, good morning to you.
Hi, Adrian. Hi, Hannah. How are you?
Morning.
Flying the thanks. How are you keeping?
Great. I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, it was manipulating the crab in the background, and Tommy, the producer, said that you would spot it. I said, he will spot it.
Is that good? Good Ile de Ré shells, is it? Is that what's going on back there?
10 minutes talking about it, which I don't want to talk. It was only half.
I wouldn't have mentioned minutes. It, to be honest with you, until you brought it up. But
yeah, you're. I don't know. You're great. What was your vision like back in the day, Adrian? Were you good at spotting stuff? You were
very observant. My father used to always tell me he didn't have very much else to praise me about, Ronan. So that was what he used to get.
Very good.
You've had a couple of weeks off, have you? Is that,
it's great. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Yeah, we had 10 weeks in a row, and then no game for 2 weekends, and the difference it makes was huge. Yeah, so obviously, I suppose your head going into the Bordeaux game compared to where it is now, it's Coles Park. It's interesting as a study, interesting as an exercise. You kind of think that you're not stressed or you're not under the pump, but I most certainly was. So it was great to clear the head, get refocused, and back at it now, starting with Poe tomorrow and 13 weekends in a row, including Europe, which is exciting. So here we go.
Yeah. What do you, when you say that you could refresh or refocus, how do you do all that?
Dubai helps.
Come on. A bit of sunshine.
Yeah, it's amazing what a bit of sunshine does in winter. A bit of family time, a bit of fun, a bit of getting away from it, a bit of literally not being eaten by it. So, yeah, time is definitely important. And I suppose sunshine and a bit of swimming was essentially what the recipe was this time.
Is there a moment in that, like, is it a couple of days in, is there a moment where you're fully relaxed or you're getting into it, or is there a moment in all of that where you just go, that's it, I've hit the reset button now and I'm ready to go, or is it more of a gradual process for you?
There is, yeah, when your wife goes up the water slides instead of you. That's the moment you know. That's the moment you know you're relaxed. No, there isn't. I think I think the first 4 days are definitely you're still thinking that you're away from it, but you're not. And then after a little bit of 7-8 days, I think you kind of do realize, well, as a leader of the group wasn't probably where I needed to be. Our staff were definitely probably suffering a little bit, and the players were probably not where they needed to be. But it'll never be perfect, but we're always aiming for that. But it was interesting just to see how, when games roll after roll, you just be kind of taken by the time pressures, as opposed to every Monday and Tuesday, maybe you can, I suppose, do your day differently. And that'll be the plan going forward.
And Ron, just like, can you actually take a break? Like, you know, I know myself, if I'm off on holidays and I've no rugby or football or anything like that, that I'm still thinking about the games or whatever's coming up. Like, can you actually separate yourself and take that break from the start? Or, you know, does it still kind of run in the background, in the back of your head?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, I think, because when you're a player, you never can. And I think the older you got, the more competitive nearly you got, because you realise I don't have that many years left and the body doesn't work like it used to, but it also is smarter. No, you're only a young one. There's plenty of miles in those legs left. But I think it's, as a coach, where I probably... The mental turmoil sometimes is something you have to watch, but that's helped by exercising. But then when you're finished playing, you've played at a top level, you're kind of like, well, going for a jog isn't much fun or isn't very amusing, but you need that to clear the head, and exercise is wonderful in that regard. But as we all know, the only time you regret doing exercise is that kind of 30-minute period before it, whether I do it or not, and then afterwards everything is good again. So when you're coaching, it is different, I think. But I think it's a different exercise in probably organising yourself mentally as opposed to physically.
Yeah. Can you get the Sunday Times in Dubai?
No. Well, I'm sure you can, but
you didn't. You didn't hear about the Sunday Times last weekend?
No, what did I miss?
There was I would have thought this was on the top of your holiday reading list. Roy Keane in conversation with David Walsh. He picked through, there was a lot of interesting bits and bobs in it, but there was one that stood out particularly, and I'll read you the section here. He was in Wellington in 2008. I don't know if that rings any bells to you.
2008?
Roy Keane, he was down there, he was in with the All Blacks. And he, after that, he was walking up the street and ran into some interesting characters, including yourself, Paul O'Connell and Quinny, I believe. And it seems like you went for dinner. This looks like it's all brand new news to you, by the way.
No, it's not. I remember.
I'll give you the passage here. So he says that was the context to it. He'd been in with the All Blacks, gave them a bit of a pep talk, walking down the street, bumps into you lads, and you're all like, "What? You've been in with the All Blacks? Come on, we're going for dinner. Let's have a chat." So I'll take it up here in Roy's words here. So he says, "So Ronan is there. He wants to know about the All Blacks. How are you getting on with them, Roy?" you ask. "Brilliant. They're good lads. You know you're in for a tough game. Can I ask you something?" Says Ronan. "Go on. Have they mentioned me?" And Roy says, "I swear he hasn't had his main course yet." "Do I lie?" he wonders to himself. "To be honest, Ronan, they mentioned you on Monday morning at 9 o'clock. I effing knew it. They're effing always going after me." "It was brilliant," says Roy. "I went to the test match on Saturday. The weather was atrocious. One of the worst games ever." I think what he was trying to get across was an insight into your mindset of, you've been in camp. What are these lads talking about me? They're always after me.
Yeah, but I remember that dinner. Yeah, he did talk about it. He goes, "What's the blame game plan? The game plan is they're going to attack you." But that's no different for All Blacks, Australia, South Africa, England, France. That's the reality if you're playing number 10. So anytime there's an attack, they're going to go after the 10 channel. That's what happens, and that's what did happen, and they got a lot of joy out of it on many occasions. I suppose what we didn't do at that time was probably move me around between 10, 12 and 13, essentially not take the brunt of the force of their attack at many stages. But yeah, it was very funny. It was a great dinner, actually. I remember that. It was because it's with rye, and rye doesn't dilute anything. So it was I remember that. Yeah, it was a good chat, really good chat, actually, good dinner.
Not diluting anything, the company that he was in last night, I can only imagine the type of conversation. What was it, when you say it was great, what was it that was good about it? What did you take from it?
Oh, just because it was something that you'd... I suppose it was weird in the fact that, you know, is this actually Roy Keane that we're at dinner with, you know? And it was, and he was very normal. And Don Thorpe, Paul, he was there as well. Quinny was there. We had very different, interesting characters in our team as well, and just the capacity to have a real dinner with him and I suppose probe him and search him and ask him decent questions was very revealing and very interesting. And the fact that I think we'd, if it was 08, we'd probably just won two European Cups there. And I can remember in 05 when we met Roy in the lobby and with Lawrence Delalio in the Vale of Glamorgan Hotel before we flew off to New Zealand, and Roy was asked, how did I think it go in front of myself and Delalio? And he goes, New Zealand will win 3-0. But he didn't mean it in a malicious way or anything. He just said it, and that was his opinion, and that's, I suppose, why he's respected.
Yeah. What are you tapping him up for when he was a Sunderland manager at that time, or might have been just sort of left him? Were you tapping him up for coaching insights or player insights?
No, the peak of the playing days. No, this was all playing. There was no coach. So that's what, it's nearly 13 years ago, isn't it? 14 years ago, that's a long time, as we know, moves. So, no, we were in the peak player mindset those days.
And you're trying to, what had happened was he'd been in the All Blacks team meeting from early in the morning. They'd given him full insight into the game plan and trusted him to not go off and meet up with another Corkman and obviously give them an insight. And I presume he held his word, did he? Or did he?
No, but it was just for sure. He would have been there. So it was like he was playing against Ireland at the weekend when you're invited in like that as a kind of to shadow the coach or the playing group in New Zealand or in any team. So yeah. He would have been aware exactly. So the trainers in any setup aren't going to be diluting their words in terms of what they want their players to achieve, especially before a test match. So what happens in that situation is Roy would have heard everything. And obviously my name coming up, he would have been probably laughing a bit in terms of knowing he was going for dinner tonight, kind of going, well, yeah, I know what the game plan is. And yeah, Roy's just going to see a lot of traffic in his channel. That's the same for most test games at Tier 1 level, that's for sure.
Did you use that? I definitely remember speaking to you after games where that would have been the case. And as you say, maybe it was the case more often than not. But would you have used that, even though it's just an accepted thing even now that you try and hit the 10 channel as much as you can, would you have used that as would that have given you a bit of chippiness on the pitch that I'm the main man here and they're trying to get me and I need to do everything in my powers to try and avoid that? Would you have used that to kind of counter it in some ways?
No, not really. In reality, it was either, normally Dave Wallace inside you, Darce outside you, and Rico at 13. So when you have me there, if you have any bit of intelligence, you're going to try and run through this guy or run as near as possible to him all day. So that's what happens off strikes, off phase one. But in the phase game, it's a little bit harder to get at you because Wally was incredibly good at tackling for me most of the time, and then Darce was excellent as well, but there was times when you just have to try and get him down as best you can. But it's obviously changed now in Ireland because I suppose it's one of the strongest parts of Johnny's game is he's an excellent defender, so teams have to look about it going differently.
Look, speaking from experience, I don't know if a coach is worth their salt in a game if they're not having a look at the 10 and seeing how they can kind of disrupt his game plan, and once you have a bit of trust in your players around you, that your flanker's going to make the tackles and kind of keep you safe in some ways, and that your centre's going to run hard balls so that you're not taking hits and having to do some of the dirty work, so you can kind of get on with helping your team around the field and making good decisions. You're going to do it all right, but as you mentioned, it's definitely changing the 10 position. Johnny has perfected the choke tackle, you know, and teams are less inclined to kind of run down his channel as much because of that. But, you know, there's still opportunities there. And as you said, when you step into the 10 position, you kind of know that teams are coming for you, flankers are coming for you, 12s are coming for you, and you need to be ready for that. You know, it's a physical game. Exactly. You got to step up and make your tackles.
Yeah, that's the bottom line, exactly. You know, you got to step up and make your tackles. But what you also want to do is make sure that your key playmaker and attack has sufficient energy to be able to see, yeah, I suppose, opportunities when he has the ball. But the big difference in Ireland in November probably has been the fact that they've spent so much time in attack that they look like a different team. And they've done that by being able to control the ball, I think. And rugby hasn't changed in the fact going back however many hundreds of years, is that you want the boys that are most comfortable at dictating the play to have energy for the right, I suppose, tasks they have, as opposed to if they're hitting rocks and they're defending, it's not really, there's another 14 guys on the pitch that can help in probably doing that role better.
Yeah, look, I think, like, you know, in attack, Ireland showed some sublime skill and some really good phase play, but just picked up there, like, do you think maybe enough questions weren't asked about their defence because their attack was so good and they had so much possession?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think as you know, at the top level, like, little things like footwork and running lines and accelerations and timing of the pass make a big difference. Yeah. I think if you analyse probably in the last 24 months, potentially, it was probably very evident when an Irish forward was going to run into contact. While you look at Ireland now, lately, they are very, I think, hard to predict. Is this guy in a carry mode? Is he gonna play the ball? Is he going to, you know, I mean, faint with the ball? I think they've got their timing and alignment between the forwards and backs really well organised.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you have world-class players like Tadhg Furlong who are able to do that, you know, running with ball in hand, throwing no-look passes, offloads, stuff like that. It does make Ireland look like a different team, very, very unpredictable. And that's what you like to see, you know. It's great to see forwards being able to have that handling, that footwork, you know, being able to do those out-the-back passes, and just keeps defence guessing. And as you said, it's those little 1% that can change a game at the top level.
Yeah,
and I think that comes from a probably competitive camp. You look at the Irish team now, there's huge competition. I think there's maybe one or two spots and not so, but you know, when you have someone really chomping at the bit and trying to get into that team, the team nearly runs itself and it's easy for the management. But you, from Ireland forward's point of view, there's incredibly competition in the back row, in the second row, and probably at hooker, at and I mean, when you've Cian Healy not starting, it tells you how competitive an environment you have. So, like, once you have like that at your disposal, it makes training incredibly competitive. Once training is competitive, you usually have transfer, and that's what you can see now, that they've probably they're playing with a great tempo, but with a big deck to choose from.
Yeah, huge depth, and it's great to see. It's great for the team. And
One of those positions, and no two better people to talk about it, obviously, that maybe there's not that, sorry, there is depth, but in terms of experience, and I know you were talking about it in the Examiner this morning, Ronan, about the 10 position. Joey Carberry has just turned 26. He'll be 28 by the end of the next World Cup. He'll no longer be that sort of young buck with this. He'll still have plenty of years to play, but that's not like the field is open up ahead of him. We're all in, obviously, now for the next 22 months on Sexton. Can I ask you just a slightly different question maybe than we've spoken about before? How do you go about keeping Joey Carberry happy over that period, in that he'll be 28 by the end of the next World Cup and the guy he's trying to shunt out of there isn't going anywhere for the next 2 years?
Well, you don't know that. You don't know, because what happens at this level and at that age is that you kind of, I would say in Johnny's situation, he'd be taking it season to season. So, like, he's going nowhere because there was no one to push him anywhere. Now, from the the Argentinian game, I suppose one of the big winners was the management in that regard, because Joey Carberry played the way he did. I think he looks, we all know he's an excellent runner, but his game management looked very good and his goal kicking looked very good. So it's probably a starting point for Joey, and the fact that he hadn't presented fit every Monday to be able to be picked. So it's like a new season, new career starting from on, started last Sunday for him. So, I mean, there's four rounds of Europe before you get to the Six Nations. There's other games. So I'm sure the management will have a plan about how they want to use their tens. But
does he, does he see any game time for you in the Six Nations?
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will. I think the Six Nations is hugely confrontational. Is that the word?
That's the one.
Robust competition, and you're going to need minimum two in each position. Like there is always you need three. You know, and I think you looked at Harry Byrne coming on the last day, and he looked at ease, but he think hasn't had enough games for Leinster either, so obviously he'll play for Leinster, Johnny will play for Leinster, Joey will play for Munster, and then the three of them will try and play for Ireland, and then it's up to the Irish management to because you can't just keep playing Johnny. That's not the plan, because with all respect, it's the World Cup is still, we're midway through the cycle. Japan seems like such a long, long time ago. We have the same amount of time before France happens, Adrian. So, like a year out from a World Cup, there's no issue in blooding new players. Joey Carberry isn't a new player. Harry Byrne is a new player, but like they still have a 10-month window where they need to find their feet and get up to speed, because it's I think at that age profile in international rugby, with all the respect for Johnny, you need a plan B.
Yeah, I think nothing's more evident than with Johnny out now for the next couple of weeks with that injury. Like, you know, he won't get game time there. And will Leinster go with Ross Byrne? Will they go with Harry Byrne? You know, Joey should hopefully get a good run of games. You know, he has competition from Ben Healy himself, but that should kind of put him hopefully in a good frame of mind and with a good bit of rugby behind him leading into the Six Nations.
Yeah, all right.
You're right. Munster and Leinster will do what suits them best, not what suits Ireland best, because they've got important games, and that's the reality of what happens, you know.
Yeah, well, look, good to see you back and refreshed, and we'll get the load on of that crab at some point down the track. I'm really intrigued by it now. I wasn't interested at all until you mentioned it, so we'll get details on that again. Good man.
Go away and have a coffee. Good luck.
Cheers. Yeah. Cheers. Ronan McGarry on the line there. What would you do, Hannah, in terms of the Six Nations? Do you deliberately set out with in mind, like I personally think there's going to be a bit of management to Joey Carberry over the next couple of years, in that you can't, he understands maybe that he's going to be second fiddle to Sexton, but at the same time he's got to see game time both from his own engagement point of view and from an Irish progression point of view. Do you set out in advance of that and say, listen, you're going to get this game and this game, and that's how we're going to work that?
I don't know if you can plan it. Like, you know, as we say, Johnny's currently injured, he's obviously expected to be back in a couple of weeks, but you just don't know. I think you got to take it. Come December, you kind of have an idea. We all know that Johnny's our number 10 and he's the one we'd love to go with. But at the end of the day, you know, first game into the Six Nations, you know, Sexton could be gone after 10 minutes and we have to rely on Carberry. He'll definitely see game time, definitely in the Italy game anyway. But I'd love to see him get a little bit more, because, as you say, with sport, you just don't know.
Yeah, fire him in against happen. Scotland and like let him at a game like that where we can just have a bit of a look, like you say. I mean, we're obviously talking about the perceived lesser nations in the Six Nations, but like just letting him have a couple of game time. So if it comes to it in the World Cup, that he's not going in totally raw.
Yeah, but I'd also hope that, like, you know, I presume, I don't know Joey, but I presume he's a competitive guy, and that I would hope he's not content with being, Johnny's ahead of me, like, and I'm number two here, happy to get on the bench. Like, I would hope that he's like, do you know what? I want to show that I can be the number one guy coming up for the World Cup and actually start to really push Johnny a little bit, you know. And he may not get there, but it'll only make him a better player, it'll make Johnny a better player, and it'll make the team better, you know. These guys are professionals, they're playing the top level, and they should be ambitious and want to be the best in their position. And if I was him, I wouldn't be content with the number two spot.
We've Ewan on YouTube considering Scotland perceived weaker nation. I don't know really is a huge.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree that Scotland are weaker. They've put in some good performances, you know, they've excellent players.
The point being, you're not going to put them in against England, you're not going to put them in against Wales, and you're probably not going to put them in against France.
They're maybe the teams we need to put them in against, you know, because if it comes to the latter stages of the World Cup, you know, and we don't have Johnny, or Johnny can't last, you know, 60 minutes. As Roger was saying, like, they do target 10s. What if Johnny is gone?
Yeah. And if Andy Farrell has to be comfortable that that's not a gamble, right?
Isn't yeah, that exactly. That's what I mean. He needs to he needs to play him, and so that Joey hopefully can show him, I'm well able to play these teams. You know, I'm well able to pull the strings, you know, and put the team around the park where we need them to be and take our points when they're on and stuff like that. And he'll only get that through playing the Six Nations. Essentially, well, it's great to get results in the Six Nations. This current Six Nations means nothing. So why not?
What about Greg McWilliams, Ireland now? A lot of chopping and changing. I've lost count of the number of out-halves that they've had, post yourself. What's... it's a very different conversation in some ways. What's your take on that situation?
Yeah, look, it's been... a difficult position for Ireland throughout the years. You know, we had Nora Stapleton was there for such a long time before she retired, and she filled left a huge hole there when she left. And I think we'd struggled over the years to find a 10 that I suppose fitted the game plan and played the way the coaches wanted to over the years. And we tried Niamh Briggs in there, you know, and we tried numerous other players, but, like, you know, myself included, both myself and Niamh Briggs were back three players, kind of converted to 10. And it just has been a problematic position for Ireland. And it's one that is so pivotal, as we mentioned, for kind of trying to get a team into the right positions around the park. And it just needs consistency, you know. And I think Stacey's done a great job there for the team over the last few years. She has so many aspects to her game. But the problem there is that she's a contracted sevens player currently playing in Dubai in about 10 minutes, I think,
right, okay.
with the sevens. And, you know, we had to play Enya Breen there. Again, another player who's not a 10, converted from a centre. And now I'm thinking for this upcoming Six Nations, is Greg McWilliams going to go with Enya Breen at 10? For the Six Nations, is he looking around for somebody else? Will he have Stacey Flood back? And unlikely, maybe for a couple of games, because the Six Nations clashes with a couple of World 7 series around that time. But yeah, look, it's tricky. It really is tricky. And you know, having played in the club scene the last couple of weeks, I haven't seen too many 10s who I've played against that would be up to the grade.
Right. You touched on the sevens issue, and the it's more of a structural issue, right? Like, it's away from a straight team selection. It's deeper than that. What have you made, I wonder, of everything that's gone on, looking now from the outside in over the last while, between the Rugby World Cup fallout, the Anthony Eddy comments, obviously, a couple of weeks back, the facility situation that we had with the provinces not that long ago, and everything that's gone on around that from the outside looking in?
Yeah, look, it's difficult. It's difficult for me, who not so long ago was part of that setup and, you know, had been for a very long time. And again, the failure to qualify for the World Cup was a really, really tough one to take, you know. And I've trained with those girls for so long. I know the work they put in. And unfortunately, we didn't get the results on the day, you know, and performances maybe didn't warrant that. And that's something that players have owned up to, you know. But
it seemed to me like the players wouldn't have had an issue with taking responsibility for that. It was just that the inquiry was ongoing into it, and the nature of the comments in that instance, particularly being so public at that time, preempting what might come down the track.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, the players themselves know they didn't perform, like, and they genuinely would put their hand up and say that, you know. But, like, we used to pride ourselves, and this is when I was in there, and I hope nothing has changed, but, like, it's not just the players on the pitch, it's a whole squad, and that includes team management. And maybe I think some of those comments came across as it was the girls who failed to do their job as opposed to the whole squad in that aspect of things. And it was disappointing to hear, you know, that blame was kind of placed solely on them when it was a squad effort, management including, you know, and Anthony Eddy there. And he was a coach of mine for a very long time, and he gave me plenty of opportunities both in sevens and 15s. But it is just difficult. The sevens, 15s crossover does not help, you know, because a lot of players who, you know, are doing well, maybe underage or at club level, are whisked off to sevens, and maybe 15s doesn't get the development that it needs, you know, and the players that it needs. And I don't know, it is a difficult one. You know, Greg has a tough job on his hands coming in to, one, get a squad together that he feels is worthy of, you know, winning a couple of games at the Six Nations and building a squad around the next World Cup. And he's going to have a tough job, you know, with morale being at an all-time low, I'd say, right now. And thankfully, you know, they won their couple of games there to send off Junior on a high, but kind of probably only papers over the cracks a little bit. You know, it's not job done. Back on the horse and we go again. There's a lot of work to be done to get these guys in a good position to play and play well against the likes of England and France.
The optics of it weren't great, I suppose, is the thing. And when you're feeling a little left sort of hung out there on your own, and probably not great timing. And look, at you hope that Anthony Eddy and Devin Usafora, they've learned the lessons from that, and everybody's hopefully on the same train going forward. As you said, there's maybe a clean slate now with Craig McWilliams coming in. Righto, it is 20 past 8. Lots still to come on the show. Do keep your comments coming into us, by the way. Lots of good stuff coming into us this morning on YouTube and on the various other platforms as well. We have lots still to come here on OTBM. We're going to hear from Alan Brogan. We're going to be talking football with Stephanie Roach, and up next we're going to catch up with Sean O'Hara.
OTB AM with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
All right, 8:23, and we should let you know that this ridiculous facial here is not just for the crack. It'll be coming off on Tuesday, I'll be delighted to say, and I'll be delighted to see the back of it. But it's all for a good cause, obviously, in relation to Movember. And we have decided that with Owen off today, and the fact that we're going to be talking to Sean O'Hara in a couple of moments as well, that we'll do our final Mo ranking on Tuesday. So you won't want to miss that. It'll be between myself, Ger, and Owen. And I am the reigning champ, so we'll see if I can maintain my crown for the last and final one. Joel put us through our hoops on Tuesday, and I will mention as well that just in the outbreak there you'd have heard Conor Myler and Lena Tice focusing on recovery. We've been talking to a range of top Irish athletes who are Whoop ambassadors. They've been talking to us about their sleep, their recovery and training insights, and much more to come as well over the course of the next 5 weeks, all the way in the lead into Christmas. So you can get your pen and paper out and pay attention to what the experts are telling you and how you should be dealing with yourself in the new year. Check out hashtag unlock yourself for more on that, all in partnership with Whoop. You can see whoop.com for much more detail on all of that. Do keep, as I said, the comments coming into us over the course of the morning. We'll bring those to you, with you all the way until 10 this morning. Going to catch up with Stephanie Roach in just a little bit, and we'll chat to her about the match last night. Alan Brogan too on the way. But right now, 30 marathons in 30 days. Sean O'Hara, good morning to you.
Morning, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. You're all aboard that moustache train as well. I'm delighted to see.
I am, unfortunately, and I'm the same as yourself. I can't wait to get rid of it on Tuesday
I find that the mask helps because you don't have to talk to people about it. And then the second talking to somebody with the mask on, and then you take it off and you forget that you have it, and you're wondering why people are looking at you like such an idiot.
Yeah, you see their grimace and then you realise you still have a moustache.
A neighbour of mine said to me during the week, she said, what you're doing there is really admirable. Which I took as a great compliment and an insult all in the one go. How's the body?
Surprisingly good, considering I've done 25 consecutive marathons now. Still, like, legs are still in one piece and kind of feel like they haven't done a whole lot, surprisingly. So I'm just going to keep kind of doing what I'm doing for the next 5 days, and hopefully I'll come off the back of the 30 feeling grand.
I can't even fathom. You know, I've never ran a marathon myself. I find 5K a struggle. What you're doing is incredible. And I actually read an article on you there. You said you don't even like running. You chose 30 marathons in 30 days.
I said it the first time I was on here. I really dislike running. I'm not a fan of it at all. It's either you're going very hard and it's sore and painful, or it's very slow and boring. So
has that changed, Sean, over the last 26 days, or you've become
harder?
You
know what? I enjoyed my first run there the other day. I think it was day 22 or 23, and it was just, the weather was lovely. I was running down through the Sandy Mount kind of nature reserve there. Tide was high, the sun was just about to set, and it was just like a beautiful day. It was the first time I was kind of like, oh, I'm actually kind of enjoying this. It only took 22 or 23 marathons to feel that way, but who knows, I might enjoy the last five as well.
And are you running with like music in your ears, or are you kind of just listen to what's around you, or how do you kind of get through it?
mixing it up a little bit. I've been lucky enough that I've had people joining me at different stages throughout the month, and kind of like just chatting away to people while they're there. And then when they kind of disperse and you're on your own, it's been a mixture of just headphones out and doing your own thing, or putting a podcast in, or a bit of music. But after a while, it all kind of blurs into background noise anyway, so you're kind of just left with your own thoughts no matter what you're listening to.
And what are those thoughts?
Kind of an interesting mix of thoughts, just mostly, why am I doing this? I can't wait for this to be over. Yeah. But I was saying yesterday, I put up a post on Instagram about the obviously 25 of them done. And it's funny because like 3 years ago, just over 3 years ago, I was admitted into St. Pat's, and being in my own head with my own thoughts was somewhere I couldn't be for 5 minutes, and absolutely hated the idea of it. And I've been left with numerous hours of being in my own head and alongside my own thoughts over the last 25 days. And it's somewhere I've come to really enjoy being and kind of relish the sitting there with my own thoughts and kind of thinking about what's going on. Or the way I'm able to act with my own thoughts now is completely different to 3 years ago. So that's kind of been a thing that clicked in my head over the last couple of days. I'm kind of like just very proud of myself for what I've done and kind of where I've come from as well, to be able to be in this position now and obviously raising a huge amount of money and awareness for a charity like Movember, but also just being kind of at peace with myself as well.
Yeah, and I think, like, obviously what you're doing is, you should be proud of yourself. It's very commendable, as someone who's, you know, also was admitted to St. Patrick's Hospital a good few years ago now, for my own issues, to be able to, as you say, be at peace with your own thoughts, which were once so negative. You know, it shows great strides that you've done, and it's great to be able to look back on that and see how far you've come, you know. And I think what you're doing is amazing, you know, both for yourself and for charity, and kind of just to spread awareness. And it's great to see. So thank you for that.
Oh, no worries. It's nice to be able to even like having a chat with people that you kind of wouldn't have talked about before, and like the amount of people that have kind of come forward while you're on a run with them and talking about their own kind of history with mental health issues or kind of struggles they've faced in the past. And some people have even opened up to me. They've said they haven't talked to anyone about it before. So that's been like a really interesting point of this whole challenge, and kind of getting people involved and having those kind of conversations. It's really nice to feel people are comfortable enough to open up with me because of that.
Yeah. Another thing that resonated with me when I read about you gave an interview, you said you now kind of have a toolbox kind of that helps you get through, and that was something for me too, that I kind of have these resources or these things that I turn to help me kind of stay in a more positive frame of mind, and it just kind of struck at me a little bit that we all need to find ways in which we can help ourselves. And as you said, the more you're talking about it, the more people are actually coming and talking to you about their own struggles, and they've never opened up before. And it's really heartwarming to see, you know. And from my point of view, I never thought I would end up talking about my mental health so publicly. But when I heard the feedback and that people were opening up or going to counselling because of, you know, stories I told, it was all worthwhile. And I'm sure you feel the same about that.
Yeah, definitely. And it was definitely something I was thinking of when I was coming into something, kind of the magnitude of this challenge was creating something so big that it got people talking and hopefully pushed people into feeling comfortable talking about their own mental health and things like that. Because it was just a place I was in before that I wasn't comfortable talking about it at all. And just like wasn't willing to talk with anyone about it. So there wasn't even the tools out there for me to realise what was going on in my head, or I didn't hear anyone else talking about their own mental health struggles. So that kind of like alienated me again and kind of pushed me back inside my own head. So I hope that have someone seeing this or seeing like the pair of us talking about it now kind of realize that it's very normal, and a lot of people go through very similar situations, and kind of hopefully that'll be a key to them unlocking whatever they need to do with their own mental health.
Absolutely.
Sounds like it's almost been a little bit cathartic in and of itself, outside of the torture of doing the physical torture of doing the run, Sean.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of, there'll be definitely points of the last 25 days or the 30 by the end of it that I'll come away very grateful for, and kind of things I'll hold close to my own chest and keep with me forever, and things I've learned about myself and learned about others because of it. And just even some of the people I've met through all this as well have been amazing, like people I probably wouldn't have met otherwise, or kind of even people that I've had mutual friends with but haven't been fortunate enough to meet. But because of this, I've kind of caught up with them and had a chat and kind of learned a little bit more about them themselves and their stories, you know.
Absolutely. I think it really shows the support network that you have around you, because I'm sure you've had so many people rally around you and send you so many positive messages about that. You know, it kind of really sticks with you that there are so many people out there that care, you know. And
Oh, definitely. And so many people that are in the almost identical situations as yourself, or like when I was going through my kind of struggles three years ago and before that again, it was the sort of thing that I thought no one had the same thing I had, or no one was thinking the same way I was. And you realize people have the almost identical triggers to you, and kind of the same things bug them as bugged you. And I had thought I was completely alone at the time, but turns out there's a lot of people in the exact same boat as you, you know.
Yeah.
Makes it very comfortable and easy to kind of talk about then.
Yeah, well, I know that you're under time pressure. I know that I've been moved by the conversation here over the last 5 or 6 minutes. And I know that if there are people that are watching us or listening to us this morning that want to get involved, number one, you can head along to Movember.ie, and there's a whole list of charities up there and ways to get involved. It's going to be next year at this stage, but there are definitely ways to get involved. You don't necessarily have to run 30 marathons in 30 days or even grow a ridiculous moustache. There are other ways to get involved. So do that. And then the other way, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sean O'Hara 2 on Instagram,
yeah.
Am I right?
Exactly, that's
and there's,
the one.
There's links to GoFundMe page and ways to get involved. And also, if anybody wants to come and support you, what's the route today?
Exactly. I actually don't have a route today. Today I'm going off my own head. So I'll be starting and finishing at the same point in
and
the Phoenix Park that I have.
Whatever happens, happens.
And after that, exactly, yeah. I'm just going to go for it and see what happens. But hopefully I'll have a route up now this evening for Saturday and Sunday and Monday. So if anyone wants to join me over those last 3 days, they can work away. And then Tuesday, I'm going to be just going flying solo for the last day.
Class. Well, listen, you're an inspiration. I know we've kept you way over time, so apologies for that.
Agree.
Go out and enjoy the run today. And thanks a million. We'll catch up with you at some point out the other side.
Perfect. Thanks very much, guys. Have a good day.
See ya.
Brilliant. Sean O'Hara on the line there. Heading into marathon number 26 today. I can't even begin to fathom it. It's really some achievement. And you've spoken about your mental health advocate yourself, Hannah, and you were very giving there, and I really appreciated that conversation. It was sitting back and just letting you guys get at it. I do think that there'll be a lot of people. We always find when we have conversations like that, somebody like you who will be an inspiration to people, that people will look up, who can be so open about their story, that people do take comfort from that and do take that as a cue to open about their own stuff. And like you said, that you found yourself, that people have come and spoken to you about it afterwards, which is powerful.
Yeah, look, I think similar to what Sean said, when I was struggling with my own issues, I kind of felt like I was the only person in the world who was struggling like that, you know, and part of the reason why I didn't reach out was because I was quite afraid that people wouldn't understand or wouldn't really be able to help. And you know, the more I've spoken publicly about it, the more people have reached out to me, and I've realised how common it actually is, you know. And we're all human, we all have good days and bad days, and it's kind of how we deal with that and our resilience and the tools we have to be able to deal with our bad days that may lead us down different paths. And it's just great to be able to see, I suppose, the stigma around mental health, you know, being removed. We're not quite there yet, but it's certainly a lot better. We do have our wellbeing weeks and our mental health awareness days, and, you know, kind of suicide awareness days and stuff like that. And people are realising that there is help out there. There are people willing to help them and give them the support they need. And, you know, hopefully that's pushing people in the right direction to get the help they need and the help they deserve.
COVID seems to have bizarrely helped in this. Is that a ridiculous thing to say, in that people are a bit more inclined to be open with their... When things haven't been going great, people are a little bit more open about it?
I think COVID has probably exacerbated some mental health issues for people, and kind of realised that some of the restrictions they've imposed, people haven't been able to do some of the activities or travel, which maybe are their ways of kind of relieving stress and pressure. And then there's been, you know, maybe financial stress, you know, stress around jobs and whatnot with the pandemic. And it's definitely brought a lot more issues to the front. And yeah, I suppose people were checking in on people a little bit more, because all they could do was Zoom and house party and everything else, and they had to talk to each other a lot of the time. And while the pandemic obviously hasn't been great, you know, if that's something that comes out of it, that people are more willing to talk about their own negative thoughts in their head and reach out and ask for help, then, you know, that's a positive we'll take from it.
I've definitely found the how are you conversations are less and less of the I'm grand that people are actually, I've found even with strangers at times, you can be passing in the street and it's actually today has not been great, which feels like a real
turning point.
Exactly the right way to put it. As I said, you can check out Movember.ie for much more details on how to get involved in that and the full list of services up there as well. If it is a case that you need somebody to chat to today, that is a good resource to go to. It is 8:37. It is Friday morning. We're going to catch up with Stephanie Roach in just a little bit. We'll let you know what's happening across the back pages, the newspapers as well, and bring you up to speed on all of that. And by the way, do keep your comments coming into us as well. Today, Brian Dillon, good morning to you. He's saying that Sean can do all the marathons he wants, but that I'm safe at the top spot of the moustache rankings, which is, again, very generous sentiment, and I do appreciate where that's coming from. Okay, we're going to turn our attention to football now, and our next guest is going to join us in a couple of moments' time. We're going to... It's like the show has been designed for you this morning, between former Ireland out-halves and former Dublin footballers and mental health advocates and Stephanie Roach, who's also a United fan. You're a United fan, am I right?
Yeah, for my sins.
What are your thoughts? Ole was sort of time was done and the right move? Or?
Yeah, I think, look, after the defeat the weekend, he had to go. You know, there were slight improvements here and there, but again, consistency wasn't there. And, you know, United are a big club and we're really struggling at the minute. And I felt like he couldn't maybe get the system right and get the best out of his players. And hopefully we'll get someone in who can.
There's John Giles was on last night and he was talking about the Ralph Ragnick, who's the godfather of German football, as the cliche goes. He's described that he was behind the likes of Tuchel and Klopp and all these guys, and he's coming in now. It seems he's going to come in, and I think the ambition is he'll come in an interim gig and then he'll get the director of football gig at some point down the track, which would be a first for United as well. Like, in the one way, Giles wasn't particularly a fan of it, by the way, but I can certainly see the attraction of the stability of somebody like that, who's a maturer manager and comes in and just calms everything down a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think maybe Ole didn't have enough experience that he needed, and United just need a bit of stability. They've had so much chopping and changing over the years, you know, and coming after someone like Sir Alex Ferguson was always going to be a difficult gig. And I suppose we just need somebody to settle down, get us a few decent results, try to keep us or get us into Champions League football next year, and go from there. You know, title is gone from us this year, but we just need to get players playing good football and consistently performing. You know, players like Pogba are so frustrating in that he can be world class one match and the next match you wouldn't even know he was on the pitch. Mm. You know, and it is hard with so many top class players in the team to be able to play them all and keep them all happy and get results at the same time. But hopefully he can come in and do a job and get some good results on the board and kind of get fans back happy again.
Talk as loosely now about this as you want in terms of the directness of the question, but can it be a case in that instance where, have you ever experienced that, where a group of players have lost a bit of touch, let's say, with the manager, lost a bit of faith maybe with them? What are your have you had any experience of that?
I don't know really, but like, the opportunity is there. What might happen is that, you know, having someone new in, a breath of fresh air, some new tactics might just revive the team a little bit and kind of maybe there was a little bit of staleness setting in there with Ollie, and this kind of might be a new direction. You know, Carrick had a nice win there the other day. It wasn't looking good for the first half, but personally, no, I kind of haven't had too much of that, but you know, we might see a new look side, maybe some fresh faces. I'd like to see Van de Beek getting a little bit more game time. I feel like every time he plays, he's made a scapegoat of, and he never gets to play with maybe some of the best players, you know. And
one player who didn't shed a tear, I'm sure, when he saw something was going, I'd say he was like, happy days.
He was a class player when he came in, and then we've just paid him to sit on the bench for so long. And I do think he could be a really good player for us. I just think we need to find the right position that we can play him and the likes of Fernandez and Ronaldo. And, you know, I think people have been giving out about Ronaldo signing, but for me, like, he's kept us in it and scored so many important goals. You know, and Sancho, hopefully that goal has kind of kicked him into gear a little bit and we start to get the best out of him. And yeah, just get some results on the board, because right now it's painful to be a United fan and to watch these results knowing we have the talent that we have.
You're willing to accept that Ronaldo can... Like, actually, the snapshot of how he played against Ireland, particularly in the first game when we played Portugal in Faro, where he was fairly... And you were looking at people on Twitter.
He was out of the game.
He was totally out of the game. But there was a lot of people on Twitter, and also Seamus Coleman, who were saying, you know, who were giving him a bit of lip about it. And then obviously he can do it like that. But you're willing to accept that he can do that in a couple of moments, even though maybe over the course of the game, you know, he's impacting in a way that you might not like in terms of the game plan.
Look, he's one of the best players in the world. I know he's maybe not quite at his peak anymore, but he's been scoring goals for us when we needed them. Some absolute worldies, you know, and not many others have been banging them in for us. So, like, I'd be an advocate to put him and Cavani up there and let them show the young guns how to play and put a good set of midfield in there and see how we go.
It certainly seems as if the pieces of the jigsaw are there. Like, you've mentioned some of the names already, but like the likes of Sancho, who wasn't seeing much game time in the previous regime, Van de Beek the same, and like even Cavani to a degree, and I know there's reasons for that obviously, yeah, in terms of his age, but like for a new person coming in, there's a real, it's very, all the raw ingredients are there to try and come at this afresh.
Absolutely, like he's a good experienced team there, you know, huge potential, like even with rotation that you will need, like as you mentioned with Ronaldo and Cavani and age and stuff like that, you still have great players come off the bench, like, you know, you've Rashford. I feel like Martial maybe hasn't given us much recently and kind of needs to step up his game a little bit, but yeah, there's just so much potential there. It's just we need to start playing, you know. On paper you can put out an unbelievable team, and I don't know, we might need to maybe shore up our defence a little bit. We're a bit injury prone at the back there, and you know, we need
injury
to settle that a little bit.
A couple of dodgy defenders.
I think Varane's done quite well, Varane's, but again, he's been in and out with injury. I think Bailly's a great defender, but again, sometimes I feel like he's made out of glass, and then he can also be prone to a mad own goal or error as well, and just...
You haven't mentioned Harry Maguire yet. Come on.
I don't know. He's definitely not worth 80 million in my opinion, yeah, anyway. But again, like that, sometimes he has a good game and then other times he's utterly useless. Yeah. And I can't understand for the life of me why we bought him. But I don't know. He's our captain. He must be doing something right in the training pitch. You know, we'll see with interim managers what happens here and what happens down the line. But I definitely think we need somebody else. Who that might be, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'd love Ruben Dias or someone from City, but it's never going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Alan Brogan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Adrian. How are you?
Are you a United fan or are you...
I'm a United fan, yeah.
Unlucky.
I keep it on the lowdown these days. I enjoyed the other night at least, but yeah, it's been a tough few months.
There's not been a lot to enjoy over the last while. Before we get into it, what's your sense of what happens now over the next while? Poch and Rodgers and Brendan Rodgers are the two names that are mentioned in the papers this morning. Who do you want in?
Yeah, I think Poch is probably the man. I think he's the one they've been after for a while, isn't he? So I think it's a strange sort of situation, though, isn't it? Thinking he might leave Paris Saint-Germain halfway through a season, or even talking about leaving that club now. But it obviously shows the pull of United, and I suppose that probably is his dream job.
Yeah, it does seem a bit odd, but it does seem that all the indications are that whenever he's asked about it, he's not knocking it out of the ballpark in terms of his commitment to stay at PSG, and he's possibly briefing people in the background as well that he's out of there. So we'll watch that with interest over the next while. Alan, you're with us this morning. You're at the launch of Sick Sock this week, a specially designed Dublin sock gift box. Premium quality knitted socks, cotton socks, it says in front of me here. I never had you down as such a sock advocate.
At this stage, yeah, you need something else. I've moved on from the football socks, so we're going for casual socks now. Yeah, look, it's a cool little collaboration with the guys down Sick Sock. They're a Limerick-based company, and they've kind of made, if you're listening to have a look at the website, they're kind of mainly focused on retro soccer socks today. But I've done a little Dublin collection with them, kind of three pairs of socks, loosely based on some of the Dublin retro jerseys. There's a Limerick collection there as well by Declan Hallan. So it's a nice little touch. There's a little corporate social responsibility element as well. For every three pairs of socks that are sold in a nice little gift box online, there's three pairs of socks given to a homeless charity down in Limerick, or maybe one up in Dublin if we can figure that out. So yeah, it's cool. It's nice to be involved in it. They're online from this morning, so sicksock.com.
Yeah, that's lovely. A lovely initiative. I have to say, this morning at 9:15, it's an absolute delight to be, in a way that it wouldn't normally have been in previous years, to have two Dublin footballers on the line, or one former Dublin footballer on the line, given everything that's gone on over the last little while. Brian Fenton, and we touched on a little bit with Han earlier on, but Brian Fenton was with us last week, Alan. He was talking about how this might be actually a good thing for the city to hit this refresh button. Are you having that?
That's the way we're trying to spin it anyway, Adrian.
I'm not having it.
I think honestly, losing, like, a lot of these guys have never even lost a big game before until this year. And obviously it was disappointing at the time, but I think when you look at it in the cold light of day, in the weeks and months after, like, it probably does a couple of things to give the guys, as Brian said, a chance to refresh and to kind of find that hunger within again. And it also gives the management an opportunity to really put their own stamp on the team now. Like, it was probably difficult for Desi coming in, even though he won the All-Ireland in his first year, to make any big changes, because the players had so much success under Jim, and why change something when it's not broken? But now, I suppose, in a way, it has been broken, so it gives Desi an opportunity to maybe try some of his own ideas, maybe move on some of the players that he might have liked to move on, and kind of bring in some fresh blood. And I think, as we saw with Jim over the last number of years, every team needs that, and needs new guys coming through and pushing the guys that are in the team as it stands. So look, it wasn't ideal losing last summer, but I think it'll have its benefits going forward. And look, because it throws the championship wide open again. I think we saw Conor McManus talking during the week, did we, about how Tyrone winning the All-Ireland kind of gives everyone a bit of a lift, and that, right, Dublin can be got at, even though Tyrone didn't beat Dublin. And I think, looking forward to next year, Tyrone didn't beat Dublin in the championship this year, so I think that's a game that Tyrone will want, that they'll want to beat Dublin in a championship game, kind of knowing how ambitious that group of players are, and obviously the Dublin players will want to win that All-Ireland crown back. So it makes for a very interesting year next year.
Just touching on what you said there about Desi wanting to move on a couple of players, it made me think, as one of the older players on Dublin team, I'm like, geez, he's trying to get rid of the deadwood there. Maybe made a couple of your Dublin teammates, or your former Dublin teammates who are a bit older on the panel, a bit nervous, thinking they're going to be kicked off the panel.
Yeah, to be honest, I think most of those guys would know when their time is up anyway, and I'm sure, like, they're obviously very mature individuals and very experienced footballers, so they won't be afraid to have that chat with Desi and see where exactly they stand. And I'm sure Desi won't be afraid to give him the truth. And look, every team moves on, every player moves on, and it happened to myself at a starting stage where you just know, right, my time is up now. I've given all I could. Was there another year in me, maybe sitting on the bench getting a few minutes? There probably was, but I was happy with me lot at that stage. And I'm sure the guys that we're talking about, without naming them, will know whether their time is up this year, or if they have another year in the tank.
Yeah.
What are the things that when you talk about it being broken, Alan, and in the context of the All-Ireland anyway, what are the things that he'll be looking at, do you think, now and over the next couple of months in the lead into, and I suppose sampling around the O'Byrne Cup?
Yeah, I think unearthing a few new players is probably very important. We haven't really seen anyone make the breakthrough over the last year, 18 months, 24 months. And if you think back to, say, the likes of another special players, but the impact the likes of Conor Callaghan had, the impact that the likes of Brian Howard had, even the impact Niall Scully had, who wouldn't have been a name that was destined for greatness. But look at the impact he's had on that Dublin team. So it's about trying to unearth, obviously, the likes of a player like Conor Callaghan coming through, like, you know, he's destined to be a superstar. But I suppose it's unearthing the next Niall Scully, someone like him that can slot into the team. And as I said, like, when Jim was in charge, he always tried to bring in one or two every year to freshen up the team and to keep guys kind of on their toes, or whatever you want to call it, whatever phrase you want to put on it. So I think that's important for Desi at the start of next year. And I suppose getting that hunger back, like winning six All-Irelands in a row, whatever, it's very difficult to, no matter what anyone says and no matter what the players say, it's very difficult to keep that hunger going for that period of time. Now they've lost the game, it does give an opportunity to find that spark again. And like, it really gives you something to, like, it's easier being an underdog or not an underdog, it's easier be going after something than to be trying to hold on to something. And I think those Dublin players, when they meet next January, when they get back training, it'll be easy to get that spark and to dig deep in training to go looking for that All-Ireland back.
Are there any positions particularly that you're thinking that need strengthening?
Yeah, I suppose a midfield partner for Brian Fenton is probably... it's probably important. I know kind of James McCarthy has filled that role well over the last number of years, but his I've always maintained his best position is wing back. So if they could find a regular partner for Brian Fenton, that would be helpful. But I think all over the field, like, a team like Dublin needs players pushing, players that have the jersey all over the field, and I think that's what Desi would be looking for.
Would you Fenton was on with us last week, and the the Dublin final was on in the meantime, which wasn't a great advertisement for anything, let's face it. Great drama, but the quality was not fantastic. Paul, this fella, Paul Mannion, I think his name is, seems to be doing all right. Fenton had said he dropped him a text. Would you have him back in there?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, you know, he's had a bit of a... And look, it's every man to himself. He's probably had a bit of a break now, but I think at his age now, he definitely has a couple of years left in him, and kind of why not come back in? And again, maybe watching Dublin lose in the All-Ireland last year will give him the bit between his teeth. I know his manager, kind of Kim McCudd, came out after and said he might be finished with Dublin, but like, I think a player of Paul Mannion's calibre, for him to step away so early and be done and dusted, would be very disappointed from a Dublin perspective. So I suppose as a fan and having played with him, I think it'd be great to see him back there. And I suppose he's the easy pick, as obviously Jack is the other one. I think if Desi could get the two of them back on board, it would make a huge difference. Obviously Jack has big commitments in work now. He's working as a doctor, I think he's in Temple Street at the moment. But I'm sure there's some agreement they could come to that they could get Jack back on the field come close to championship time.
Make some accommodations essentially for the fact that he's saving lives
in a pandemic.
Yeah,
exactly. Jack's worth it.
Yeah, Cluxton is the other one. That ship has sailed, has it?
Yeah, it looks like it, unfortunately. To be honest, I don't know. I probably know as much as yourself about it from what we're hearing on the grapevine. I wouldn't even have a few texts with him, but I wouldn't even ask him about that now, to be honest with you. We'd be due to meet for our Christmas pint. I mean, we won't be meeting for our Christmas pints the way things are going, but could have asked then after a few pints.
Is he still drinking Blue Wickeds? Is he? Is that not his his drink of choice?
I'd say he is. Fortunately, we're not allowed out late enough to be drinking the Blue Wickeds now. It's pretty starting at half 11. True. But look, I thought that's like kind of for me, like Stephen's, like again, he's his own character and he'll make up his own mind. But I think like the biggest disappointment for me in that is that Dublin fans and fans all over the country aren't able to give Stephen the send off that he deserves. Like for what he's given to Dublin football, it's his decision to make. But it's just the way it's at, and that's probably the way he probably would have wanted it. To be honest with you, he wouldn't have wanted any fanfare, or any roses thrown at him at all. So maybe that's why he's chosen it like that. But like it would have been nice to for fans everywhere to give him the tributes that he deserves when he finished up. And
I do think that he's very, if he has made his decision and he is gone, I do think he's very content to leave it at that. He wouldn't want that recognition or anything else. You know, he played for Dublin, was undoubtedly the best goalkeeper I've ever seen. You know, I grew up watching him. I played as a goalkeeper underage, and it was him who you'd be looking at, himself and Cliona O'Connor, and like he's been an incredible servant. And you know, I don't think anyone can fault him for actually going off and having a life. It's a huge commitment to play for Dublin, and you know, we just have to deal with that. And I think Evan Comerford stepped up and did a really good job for Dublin last year, and maybe we need to give him a chance and see how he goes, you know. And unfortunately for him, he's been in the shadows for a while, and he's a very good keeper in his own right, and you know, we see where we go.
Do either? Yeah, go on, Evan. Sorry.
Yeah, I think you're right, Han. I think that like for Evan, it's probably been a difficult enough 2 years with all this talk, and he's done well, as you said. But with all this talk, Stephen going on in the background, it probably hasn't been that easy for him. So I think next year is probably a big year for him. That obviously Stephen will be gone, so he can kind of step into that role and know it's his own and kind of make it his own. But I suppose just on Stephen, so the biggest legacy Stephen has probably left is that young lads all around the country now want to be goalkeepers. if you looked at it 15 years ago before he started, no one wanted to be a goalkeeper.
I didn't want to be a goalkeeper, and I still ended up there.
And even some of the goalkeepers that have come after him, like there's no doubt, and we've heard him talk about it, like Niall Morgan and kind of Rory Biggin and these guys. He's inspired those guys as well, and he's just brought it to a new level.
There's no doubt he changed the game for goalkeepers and the game of Gaelic and how it's played and everything else. And yeah, he's been a credit to Dublin, and we were very, very lucky to have him for as long as we did.
Listen to the two of you, like, it's impossible to get away from the thought that regardless of how good Evan Comerford is, the loss of Cluxton was an undeniable factor in the shortcomings, let's say, certainly contributing to the shortcomings of Dublin this year.
Yeah, maybe not on the pitch. Off the pitch, in terms of leadership, there was a couple of guys that maybe weren't in the dressing room last year that were there previously, and maybe that kind of had an effect on maybe bringing younger guys in and setting the tone of how they play or kind of how they assert themselves and stuff like that. But yeah, look, as you say, a player of Cluxton's calibre, not being in the dressing room anymore and not being on the pitch, it leaves its mark. Mm. Someone's going to step up and fill it.
It's a big challenge for Desi because there, obviously a number of guys have left that dressing room over the last number of years, and they're not easy, as you say, they're not easy to replace. So that's obviously another challenge he faces. How do those young guys coming through kind of replace that level of leadership that the team has lost over the last number of years? Again, it's not easy, and every team is cyclical. Obviously, like as we know, you go through a great few years and then you might have a barren few years. So I'm sure Desi's job is to make sure that the barren few years for Dublin aren't in the next few years.
It's just one year, last year.
One year,
yeah. Oh, the barren for the barrenness of a 1 year spell without an All Ireland. What's your just before we let you away? I'm interested about your thoughts on the sort of depth chart now heading into 2022 as to how you rank. Forgetting about how they finished, just your own view on the ranking of, let's say, 1 to 3 of the top teams in the country at the minute. Alan, you go first there.
Yeah, I suppose obviously like championship changes things, and like if you look at Tyrone, they did have an exceptional year last year, albeit they didn't beat Dublin. So it's hard to look past them at number one now. Then obviously 2 and 3 between Dublin and Kerry. I think I'd still probably slightly favour Dublin over Kerry, so I'll go for Dublin 2, and Kerry just pipping Mayo at number 3.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Tyrone, well worth their win. Yes, they didn't play Dublin, and I'm sure if they meet next year, it's going to be a cracker of a game. But you know, Dublin, we know the talents they have. They're definitely going to be up there. I'd put them at 2, and Kerry obviously have some great young players coming through. And unfortunately, per Mayo, I can't see that All Ireland coming next year.
It's desperate. I presume you're in the same boat. Alan, Oisín Mullen gone.
Yeah, big
Colin
loss.
Boyle retiring during the week. Just feels like there's just too many.
Lee Keegan versus the world.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, yeah, they have. It just looks like some of their tallies managers just starting to push on a little bit, and they don't look well. So there is a couple of lads coming through. I don't think the same quantity of players at that level is coming through in Mayo at the moment. And look, they might surprise us, but and look, every day they go out, you know what you're going to get from them. They'll always be thereabouts. But I think they're just a little step off the top 3 at the moment.
Yeah. All right. We'll look at sicsoc.ie, sicsoc.com, I should say, and you can head along there. As Alan said, for every pair bought, there is donation of a pair to a homeless charity as well, and you can head along to the website there to pick up yours ahead of Christmas. Alan, good man. Thanks a million.
See you, Alan.
Thanks, Adrian. Thanks, Hannah. See you later.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. Alan Brogan on the line there this morning. Interesting stuff on the Dubs and beyond as well. It's coming up to 9 o'clock on this Friday morning. Delighted to have you along with us. Lots of comments coming into us over the course of the morning on loads of different areas, and we will get to those for you over the next little while, and we're going to catch up as well with, in just a couple of moments time, we're going to talk about that. We touched on it just a little bit earlier on, the seemingly new interim Manchester United manager Ralf Rangnick. We're going to speak to Yvonne Gabriel of Build in a few minutes time about all of that and exactly what that'll mean for the dressing room and exactly who he is, so we'll let you know about that in just a few minutes. A little bit of a flavour as to what's happening across the back pages and on otbsports.com for you this morning, just before all of that. Irish golfers pulling out of the Joburg Open is the big story on otbsports.com for you this morning and on the app as well. That's after the latest strain of the COVID virus, and there's also news Munster are due to play this weekend. Safe and well, I see Tony Lean, editor of The Examiner, tweeting a little bit earlier on in relation to the Munster team there. So that's the latest situation on that. Across the newspapers, Wheel of Fortune. I was at the game last night, and I felt if somebody didn't get a photograph of the Ferris wheel in the background, that it'd be a wasted night's work. And it turns out they have done, and the Examiner have leaned in on that with Wheel of Fortune. All to play for as Ireland held by Slovakia. A shot from the game last night as Ireland get out of Dodge in so many ways. And Ronan O'Gara inside about Ireland's hope, I suppose, to try and qualify. And peak, I should say, for the next Rugby World Cup. The Irish Daily Mail, Ralph to the rescue, United up for veteran German as interim boss, they're right here. As I said, we're going to chat about that in just a couple of moments' time. Dublin Derby final, the hottest ticket in town. This is Philip Quinn writing that there'll be a big attendance, 35,000 tickets already sold for Bulls against St Pat's on Sunday's FAI Cup final. And a shot of Katie McCabe from the game last night as well. 1-1 between Ireland and Slovakia. McCabe keeps Ireland in the mix. The thoughts of Mark Gallagher inside. And if you're looking for more on that, by the way, there's plenty more from Emma Byrne, who was on co-commentary duty last night, and lots of interesting stuff to say after the game last night. So you can check that out up on our YouTube channel over the course of the morning. But we are turning our attention now to Manchester United. Delighted to say we're joined for the first time on the line by Yvonne Gabriel of Bild. Good morning, Yvonne.
Hello, good morning from Germany.
Thanks, Mia, for joining us. You're just back from Belgium. You were at Leipzig Brugge last night. Goals aplenty. But you're expecting to be sent to London this week. It's where exactly are we at on this seemingly apparent Ralf Rangnick appointment?
Yeah, as far as we know, the deal is done. So we are just waiting for the official announcement. But yeah, as I said, the deal is done. And yeah, it's surprisingly for most of the football experts, because Ralf Rangnick was not the coach everybody mentioned in the last weeks. So yeah, it's surprisingly, but let's see what will happen today. But as far as we know, Ralf Rangnick will start on Monday. He will not start on Sunday because I think it will be difficult to start with a match against Chelsea, and with just 2 days of preparation, it doesn't make sense for me. And yeah, so he will start on Monday. That's what we know. And so there's not a lot of time, because on Thursday there's already the next match against Arsenal.
Any expectation of a timeline of when you mentioned he might start work on Monday? Will the club announce today, do you think, or over the weekend?
Yeah, I think so, because they don't have so much time, so they need the time to work. Well, Ralf Rangnick needs the time to work with the team, to get to know the team. So I guess they will announce it today and he will start on Monday. Maybe he will be at the Chelsea Stadium at Stamford Bridge on Sunday to see the match, but he will start officially on Monday, I guess.
Okay. Can you talk to us a bit, Yvonne, about his coaching style, what success he had in Germany? For our viewers who aren't familiar with him, who is Ralf Rangnick?
Yeah, Ralf Rangnick he's well known in Germany, because he, the story of RB Leipzig is the story of Ralf Rangnick. He started here in 2012 and he built up a structure. He gave the whole club a philosophy, a style of play. And yeah, he he helped the club to get up from the fourth division to the Bundesliga, and they play Champions League now. And he, there are a lot of young, big players now. He tried to get to Leipzig. So he is well known in Germany. That's what I said, because he had the two clubs, Hoffenheim and Leipzig. They were small clubs when he started, but he tried to help, or he built up structures for both of them to get them into Champions League.
Okay, so this is a guy with a big record in the game in Germany. What sort of football would we understand? It's an interim appointment, Yvonne, to the end of the season, obviously. What sort of football can Manchester United fans expect him to play?
Fast way of football. He's aggressive way of football. He always wants his players to run, to defend, and to defend the whole team, to defend, not just the defenders, so the whole team. And he always wants to be good in the defensive, but also if his team gets the ball, to have just some seconds to get to get forward. So just a few seconds to get forward.
And when you say he expects everybody to defend, if there are players within that group, and there might be some, who are not that willing to defend, what in terms of his character, his strength of character, if it comes to dropping or challenging, you know, mega superstars, obviously Ronaldo maybe chief amongst them, is that something that he has?
That will be a big challenge, or I will be, let's see what will happen, because as you said, Ronaldo, he's not that kind of player who likes to defend, I would say like that. But he always wants, as I said, every player to defend. So he is very ambitious, and he can talk to players and push them to do it. So he's a very also aggressive in his way of speaking to the players to convince them to do it.
Mm. Is it true that he's the godfather of gegenpress?
Mm.
And,
yeah.
And would have inspired Tuchel and Klopp?
Yes. Yeah. Of course, he inspired a lot of coaches. Also, for example, Julian Nagelsmann, the coach of Bayern Munich, he was also inspired by Ralf Rangnick, because he had a long career. He is very experienced, and if you talk to him, he's always happy to tell you the beginnings of his coaching career, when he started to develop or to be fascinated by this way of football. So gegenpressing, as you mentioned, Jürgen Klopp and Thomas Tuchel, he will meet both of them in the Premier League now. They got inspired by him, yes.
And did you say just a few minutes ago that his character was an aggressive, confrontational character?
Yeah, because he's very ambitious. He's very ambitious. And he's not just a coach. He's so much more. He's a teacher, a psychologist. He's so much more, because he always wants to develop players on the pitch, next to the pitch. So he's not just a coach. So for me, he's a perfect fit to the Premier League, because he's a manager in general.
Yeah. Manager of sports and development for Lokomotiv Moscow. What's that?
He started this job in August. He always wants to have a job, as far as I can say. So he's not that kind of person who wants to sit at home and have a nice day, whatever. But he wants to have a job in football. And so he started in Moscow. But that's what we know. His dream was always to be a coach, to be a manager in the Premier League in England, because he loves Premier League, he loves England. He has been in England as a student for 1 year. He speaks perfect English, and he always talked about the Premier League. So Moscow was his job, or is his job still his job? Because, for example, he also Marcus Gisdol, his former assistant coach. Yeah. He's now the coach in Moscow. So there are a lot of persons who are related to Ralf Rangnick. Also, for example, the assistant coach of Moscow, Marvin Kompare. So as far as I can say, he has done a lot of work in Moscow, but now this big challenge is so much more.
And finally, do you expect him to be, he takes the interim job, do you expect him to be director of football for Manchester United after this season?
Of course, yes, because as far as we know, he wouldn't be satisfied with just being the coach until summer. That's not enough for him. He wanted to have a longer lasting job. So, for example, the interim coach now, and after it, as you said, a director or whatever this position will be named, but he will be in the club or work in the club after summer, of course, because that's what he wanted to have. He not just wanted to have a job until summer.
One actual last one this time. Will he bring in his own people, or will Carrick, McKenna, Fletcher, will Mike Phelan, will they stay or will they go?
Let's see. He has a lot of persons in her surroundings, and he trusts them, of course. So In the past, it was always like that, that he had a lot of persons and persons coming with him to Leipzig, for example. And but he's also a person who gives a chance to everybody. So he's not that kind of person who says, oh, I don't need them anymore. I have my own persons, my own assistant, whatever. But so he's open for that, I would say.
All right. Well, we're going to watch that with great interest, and people can read your thoughts in Bild. Yvonne, Gabriel, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks a lot. That was good stuff. Good insight into somebody who I think a lot of people would have been as of yesterday. Who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
We'll watch with interest. Thanks, William, for coming in.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
This morning. We'll have you back. You're probably going to give us a miss, for I'm sure, for a few months at least next year anyway. Best of luck with the season ahead. Really fascinating insights across the board this morning. Really enjoyed your company. And we'll
it's
catch
great
up
to be
again.
Here. Thank you.
Thanks a million. Cheers. So we've lots still to come. We're going to hear from John Giles in just a little bit. Do keep your comments coming into us on YouTube, wherever else it is that you're picking us up this morning. We're going to catch up with John Duggan, talking all things football after these.
OTB AM with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
Right, it is 13 minutes past nine. It's Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM. Lots still to come on the show for you this morning. We've just been getting the lowdown on Ralph Rangnick, JD. This is all done deal imminent.
Yeah, and it'll be fascinating. Will Ronaldo buy into the press? Because that's what Ralph Rangnick is all about, isn't he? He's the godfather of the press, which has obviously been molded by Klopp and by Tuchel over time. But, well, yeah, Hoffenheim, Schalke, Leipzig, very much a German philosopher, seems to be an impressive talker. We'll get the job until the end of the season, and then a two-year technical consultancy role. John Murtagh, the football director at Man United, seems to be very much a Rangnick fan. He was part of the appointment board with Darren Fletcher and Ed Woodward, and they've given him the gig until the summer. So I do think if you're going to bring someone like Rangnick in, you have to have then a thread between him and the next permanent boss over how you're playing, who you're recruiting, and getting an actual philosophy and a style into Manchester United, because they have no style.
Fair point. Weird thing is that, like, Pochettino seems to be giving all the indications that he could be willing to jump halfway through the season, but this obviously puts a full stop on that for now.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. It's very hard, I think, to prize any manager away from the processes that are currently in place.
Yeah.
Unless you're sacking somebody because of poor results and you're bringing somebody in that's free. Like Conte was free. And then he wasn't. So very few managers or people were free. So I don't really see this as a Solskjaer interim. It's like a goose-hitting appointment for Manchester United. Get a bit of stability, get a style, get a shape, get a degree of progression around players like Jadon Sancho, for example. I can see Rangnick developing.
Well, it's all there, isn't it, for a new manager that comes in, well, in terms of some of the players who haven't got a shake, and suddenly you can refresh.
Yeah, they weren't playing for Solskjaer at the end. They weren't playing for him at Watford last week. You could definitely tell that. But if you sign Varane and you sign Sancho and you bring these players into the club, you should be able to do something with them. And that's what his job will be. Will he play McFred? You know, all these kind of questions you're going to have. Will it be 4-2-3-1, which has been the case at United? You're going to have to disappoint some players. You have too many cooks in the attacking positions. What do you do with Pogba? Is he on the way anyway?
Yeah.
So there's lots of things to work out. An exciting thing. And he's very much of the view, I think, Rangnick, from listening to his briefings, that, you know, you improve the players you have, you decide who isn't cutting it, you get rid of them, and then the players you bring in, they need to improve.
Yeah.
But it's all been very much about the style of play, being pressing, and United have never been that team in the last few years. They've been a counter-attacking team before Ronaldo came.
Yeah, no, that aspect of it is going to be a real must-watch aspect to it. It's gone a 9:15. It's Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM. We're live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. And we are, as you've been hearing, joined in the studio by John Duggan, and we've plenty to get through in terms of the games. I want to touch on the match last night in Tala as well in a few minutes' time, and also the FAI Cup final as well. But we'll have a look at some of the fixtures for the game, for the weekend, and a nice little fixture to get us up and running tomorrow at 12:30.
Arsenal Newcastle, right? So this is a 12:30 start at the Emirates Stadium. So Arsenal unbeaten in 10, then a reality check, right? So they're looking to get Wenger back in, maybe as some kind of guru for Arteta.
I'm really surprised
they've been ejected by the nostalgia. The nostalgia has drifted from Old Trafford to North London. And maybe Arteta is feeling, oh, I need someone here to hold my hand, because it was a reality check. And yeah, Arsenal played their best team against Liverpool, did all right for half an hour, and then really struggled with the Liverpool turnovers, 17 turnovers they had against them. Look, I think Arsenal have improved. I think Aaron Ramsdale's been a really good addition, you can obviously tell. But the jury's out when it comes to the top four for Arsenal. They play Newcastle, who've decided, I think, that their best form of defence will be attack. If you've got Alan Maximan in your team, you always have a chance, but they're dreadful at the back. Mm-hmm. Carl Darlow seems to be suffering from a lack of confidence. And Eddie Howe was seen at Bournemouth as an attacking manager, but January can't come soon enough for Newcastle to get some reinforcements into the defensive areas if they're going to survive. There will be goals in this one tomorrow.
Stephen Gerrard. What Stephen Gerrard's next game is going to be the agenda for the next little while. I presume it'll be a tougher job for him to be dancing up and down that touchline against Crystal Palace.
Well, he's got the motivational aura, right? He's got to fix the defence. They didn't have much possession against Brighton last week, and that'll be the key thing, because Villa have been pretty porous. He went, 4-3-3 at the back last week. Can he get the best out of Ings and Watkins and Buendia? I think he probably can. The great thing about Gerrard at Rangers was that he sorted the defence out and they went unbeaten last season. It's going to take a while. Palace have been good at home. I love them. I really think Vieira's done an excellent job. I think Conor Gallagher is a breath of fresh air in the Premier League, plays with a smile on his face, really skillful midfielder. You could definitely possibly see him back at Chelsea if he wants to go back there, because he's on loan from Chelsea at the moment. Benteke scoring goals, just looking through the stats, 4 goals in his last 5 games. I think Eduardo has been a really good addition. Defensively, they've been a little bit suspect. They've conceded more from set pieces than any other club, Adrian. So this has a draw all over to me.
Liverpool, Southampton then obviously in the other one, and like Liverpool are a little bit sort of, you're not really that sure what you're going to get with them from week to week at the minute.
Yeah, well, 3 o'clock at Anfield, got the crowd back. I think this could be a long afternoon for Southampton.
Right.
The way they dismantled Arsenal, once actually that row happened between Klopp and Arteta on the line, it got the crowd pumped. And maybe Liverpool needed those couple of scratchy games that they had, including the West Ham defeat, to refocus. Like, Salah and Mane have scored 18 goals between them in the Premier League alone this season. Alexander-Arnold is playing really well. Their midfield, I don't know about the depth of it, but Thiago seems to have grown in confidence a bit, and I'd expect them to take Southampton quite easily tomorrow. Southampton, for me, lack strength in their squad. And I think that Hasenhüttl is quite an intense coach, and I think that could really cost them later in the season. I think Ward-Prowse and Romeo were good footballers, but I don't know. They went down to Norwich last week. You lose to Norwich last week, you're really going to be beating Liverpool the week later. Not so sure. I think Liverpool win that easily.
The Thiago goal was a little bit Stevie G-esque.
It was like a golf stinger, like Tiger Woods or something.
But I've looked at it, I don't know how many times I've looked at it from I don't know how many angles, and I still can't exactly figure out, was the change of trajectory to do with it just clipping the grass?
I think the way he got over the ball with the foot. He really got over the ball well with the foot, and then that kind of had that kind of swerve and spin on it. Yeah,
scorer of great goals, I think John Giles.
Right on the great goal scorer.
We have to touch on Norwich. I suppose we have to touch on Norwich Wolves.
Well, we do, because will Dean Smith give Adam Ida and Andrew Omobamidele a chance? They weren't involved last week against Southampton. They won that game.
Yeah.
He's obviously trying to get them up and keep them up. He's already gone to 4-3-3 with the Norwich formation. So hopefully these guys will get a chance. I think Omobamidele probably has a better chance at the moment, because Timo Pukki is very much seen as the target man at Carr Road. But they need to be getting game time. Who are they playing? Wolves. I think Bruno Lage is probably the most underrated manager at the moment in the Premier League. Just going through it, they've won 5 of their last 7 games. Raul Jimenez is back scoring goals. I was at Molineux a couple of years ago. It's a really good atmosphere. Mm. And I thought Wolves might struggle this year when Nuno left, and the feeling of there might be a bit of a stagnation going on there. But Bruno Lage has got them well drilled. Even Daniel Podence came into the team last game and played well. So I think Wolves can take something out of Norwich, maybe another draw.
Brighton Leeds obviously is the other game, and Brighton, I don't know, is it fair to say that they're kind of punching above their weight, and Shane Duffy's obviously been a big part of that. They had the last game out, obviously didn't go exactly according to plan, and maybe there is a bit of a levelling coming for them.
I think they play really good football. I think their manager Potter's an excellent coach. I think they lack squad depth. I think they lack strikers of a real calibre, like Trossard, Mopay, But I think they play good football. You wouldn't have been expecting, if you're a Brighton fan, having seen the way they played at Anfield, that they would take 1 point to their next six from the Newcastle and Villa game. So I do agree with you, that's probably 11 and off. Yeah. I don't really see them as a top eight team. I see them maybe as a 10th or 11th team. But to keep them up and to progress, but I do think they need a bit more zip in the final third. Who they're playing, Leeds. I'd worry about Leeds. They're just off the relegation zone. Like, they're really missing Patrick Bamford. Spurs had more energy than Leeds in the second half last week, and that would worry me as a Leeds fan. I don't think, once again, their squad is strong enough, especially going forward. And I don't know if Bielsa Ball, if it's also plateauing, because I think a lot of the teams down the bottom, like Newcastle and Norwich, have things to play for because they've got new managers in there now. I think Burnley are playing a lot better, and I would worry for Leeds. I don't think it's just a foregone conclusion that Leeds will string a load of runs wins together. I don't think that.
One of the other teams that are struggling big time in the Premier League at the minute, struggling for results of any description, one draw from the last six in the Premier League, is Everton. So we're on to Sunday's fixtures here.
Well, this is George Graham and Arsenal. This is George Graham and Spurs stuff for Benitez. I mean, he's not really loved by the fans.
Yes.
I think there are huge structural issues at the club. They've spent hundreds of millions at Everton, the owners, with no return, really. Mm. They've gone through a lot of managers. A bit like Man United, that they seem to be lacking leaders. I know Seamus Coleman is there as the captain, but I think they're lacking leaders all over the pitch. Even like watching Richarlison earlier this season, like arguing about penalties and stuff. The Calvert-Lewin's absence has been a significant thing. Really significant that he's been out of the team. Yeah, they had 23% possession against Manchester City last week. Like, that's shocking.
Desperate.
No win since the end of September. And I think they're going to Brentford. Brentford, this is the type of game that Brentford need to get back on track, because they've lost four of their last five games. Mm. I think they'll be okay. They've got a bit of spark, and they've got a bit of sparkle about them, and Ivan Toney will score goals. Once again, they're a very settled team. But a lot of these teams from the Championship that come up, they don't have strong enough squads. But Benitez, it has not been a happy start. He's definitely not feeling the love that he would have felt in Tyneside at Goodison Park so far.
Leicester, on the other hand, might be have reason for, and we'll come to Tottenham in a minute, John, and apologies in advance, but reasons for a bit of momentum behind them now after the, like, it hasn't been a very Leicester season, really.
No, it hasn't.
In terms of the Premier League.
And I think that they really blew it the last couple of seasons by not finishing top four. You think about the Chelsea-Leicester Cup final, that was really competitive and close. Mm-hmm. Like last week, it was no contest. Chelsea just completely outplayed them. And that would worry me. I think Fofana's been a real loss for Leicester this season in defence. And I don't know, Brendan Rodgers, now, if we're talking about share prices, it's definitely a share price when it comes to Manchester United. It's not as high as it would have been. Hmm. Who are they playing? Watford? Watford, I don't know. Like, obviously, Ranieri's gone back there. Will Watford players get free pizza if they win? The results they've had against Everton and Man United were freakish. Like, I think Josh King can score goals. I think Sarr is probably their star player defensively. Look, I think obviously they're using Sissoko as a bit of a shield in the middle of the park. But if Leicester want to be serious about challenging for the top six, top four, they need to be winning against Watford. I think one of the things for Leicester, the issue they have, is that they play on Thursdays with the Europa League, and that is a stretcher, you know.
We come to some of the more interesting games of the weekend. West Ham particularly, like, have had good results against some of the bigger teams this season. Is City, though, a bridge too far for them?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right.
Like, West Ham, once again, I would say, are feeling a little bit of the pressure, the fact that they're playing Thursday matches in Europa League. They've had a really good run. They were lacklustre to a degree against Wolves. Wolves were a better team last week. We know with West Ham, you know what you're going to get. They're so well set up. Rice has been a revelation this season. I just think they're a fifth or sixth place team in the Premier League, which is a fantastic achievement for David Moyes. But Manchester City, as I said, like I gave the Everton stat, they had 77% possession. They went and they outplayed PSG. Now, I know PSG didn't help themselves, the fact that their top players are just walking around, but they'd no Foden, they'd no De Bruyne, and they'd no Grealish tonight.
Yeah.
That shows the squad strength. Raheem Sterling is motivated, he's hungry. Like, they even played, was it Cole Palmer last week up front, a young lad, and still beat Everton 3-0. I think it'd be a comfortable win for Man City on Sunday.
NS Moura.
Yeah, that's desperate, isn't it? That is the lowest of the low.
Like, what's going on?
You can see the passion of Conte in the sideline against Leeds last week in the second half. It's almost like he skinned them alive at halftime. Mm. And then they came out, and the likes of Lucas Moura really putting in the shift, and they won 2-1. But I think that might be more illustrative of Leeds' issues at the moment than Tottenham's strength. He knows. Then it was completely sheepish and sober and ashen faced yesterday after the game, and he knows that he is a huge job in his hands.
In some ways, and look, they wouldn't have designed, obviously, for that to have happened last night, but to be away from all of that and without that sort of distraction, could it be a blessing in disguise?
If the club have any cop, Daniel Levy, Joe Lewis, the owners, and understand this is an elite world-class manager who won a title in Chelsea in his first season, has won three titles at Juventus, has won a title at Inter Milan only this year. He's not a busted flush like Jose or Van Gaal or even Rafa Benitez. You've got to back this guy. You've got to give him as much of a carte blanche as you want. Right. And his coaching staff, and say, look, whoever you want to get rid of, you get rid of. Like, there are players there that just need to leave the club. Dele Alli, Harry Winks, Davinson Sanchez. I don't know if these lads are really going to be Tottenham players in the next couple of years. The issue has been, like, Pochettino needed to refresh about 2017 after they finished second in the league. That's nearly 5 years ago. Mm. They didn't do that. Harry Kane has looked at times to be demotivated, and Conte just needs to actually take out the metaphorical chainsaw in that dressing room.
Which may be the case at Old Trafford as well, although at Stamford Bridge in the late game, Chelsea United...
They go to Burnley Spurs, yeah. So Maxwell Cornet has been the revelation for Burnley. Scored 5 goals in 6 Premier League games. He might keep Burnley up. Chelsea, Man United, all I thought when I thought about this game is 2-0. 2-0 to Chelsea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, if United lack structure, Chelsea have utter structure. Now, Chilwell's injury and maybe Conte might be out as well. Could be an issue for them. But you know what you're going to get. You'll get 3-4-3, bringing players like Shalaba in there. Kovacic can fill the role with Jorginho if Conte's not involved. They've scored 22 goals without Lukaku. They're a model of German efficiency. Mm. And against a United team that has been shapeless. What are United going to do about Ronaldo? Because some United fans might argue, well, Ronaldo is the only reason why we're in the Champions League last 16, and he's actually...
It's a conundrum. I don't know the answer to it.
And the others might argue, you know what, you can't have 10 players in your team and a passenger who scores goals in the 90th minute.
They got
the confidence boosting win. One of the bright sparks of the other night was Sancho.
Yeah.
Like, the first time you really see Sancho play. But to me, Chelsea were fantastic against Juventus during the week. They were just completely a barnstorming display, full of vigour. You know, Hudson-Odoi. Reece James has been involved in 8 Premier League goals out of 7 games, either scoring or assisting. And he's one of the top 3 players in the league for them and me at the moment. And, like, Tuchel working with players like that, that's what Rangnick needs to do at Man United, but it's not going to happen this Sunday.
Before we wrap the FAI Cup final, Bo's Pats Sunday, what are you thinking?
I'm just thinking, you know what? The match is the match. And you'd have to think Pats would probably be the favourites based on their league performances this season, Adrian. But this is more about the occasion. And this is more about the evidence of maybe a sea change in Irish football.
Yeah.
That more people are getting bought into this. If we have over 35,000 tickets sold, that'll be the best performance since 2009.
Yeah.
That's what we want to see more so than the game. Like, obviously, it's the biggest Dublin Cup final since 2000, because the first one since 2000, all Dublin Cup final. Don't believe they've ever met before in a cup final, Bows and Pats. So, look, the passionate fans, it's the showcase day, the showpiece day, really, isn't it?
Yeah, big time.
And you can just see with the women's game last night, how quickly is the women's, and I know you're doing the pre-match stuff there with Sky on Off the Ball, suddenly it's become a thing.
Yeah.
Like, 3 years ago, would we have been talking about the women's team last night in the same manner?
Not to the same depth. That's for sure.
No.
Although,
winning
helps, I will say.
Yeah, and look, but also attitudes help, and the realization, you know what, they need support and they need a spotlight, and they need to be known, and we need to know who they are.
Cool.
You know, and I think hopefully they're going against Georgia on Tuesday. But cup final, Adrian, look forward to it.
Yeah, we'll see. Good man, John. I really enjoyed that preview.
Thank you.
We'll have you back again.
Thanks, man.
Good man. We've had plenty of comments coming into us, including this one from Alan O'Flynn. I really appreciate the support, who says, the tash is looking good, Adrian, which I know is a lie, but I do appreciate the sentiment. So, good man, Alan. Thanks very much for that. Right, we've a ton of NFL goodness coming your way this week. It's the return of OTB Club Gridiron. It'll have highlights from the snap, reports from games, early bird tickets to events, much, much more as well. You can sign up now for that newsletter, otbsports.com/clubgridiron. The snap on OTB also been back for this season, and it's brought to you all all in association with the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Northwestern against Nebraska, coming to the Aviva next year, August 27th. You can check out collegefootballireland.com for much, much more. Here's a quick snippet. Matt Carlin and Ronan Mullen on this week's episode of The Snap, talking about who should be in the mix for Coach of the Year.
Would you agree that Vrabel is the front runner for Coach of the Year at the moment, or anyone else spring to mind?
In one sense, I would say yes. Tennessee are quite an unusual team this year. When you look at the victories they've had, I think they've beaten some great teams, the Chiefs, the Rams, to name but a few. And in one sense, you have to say, you know, they've got a lot of wins and they're leading the AFC. So, yeah, he should definitely be in contention. I was very quick to write off Cliff Kingsbury this season. I thought the Cardinals were a product of Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins and just the magic they can produce. They did it for a while last year before Murray got injured and, you know, the cards started to crumble and it became quite evident that Kingsbury wasn't doing a good job. It was all about Murray. But Murray's missed a few games this year and they still succeeded. They found ways to win and adjust and they've got some great wins too. They've only lost two games. One was something of an anomaly against Carolina and the other was a whisker away from a win against Green Bay. So they could so very easily be 9-1 right now, in which case I think Kingsbury is the favourite. But you touched on Belichick and I'm a big advocate of coaches who can instill a kind of system that's time and time again consistent, kind of the equivalent of you know who the band is as soon as the song starts before the lyrics kick in. You know a Patriots game just by the style of football that they play. You could say the same John Harbaugh and what he's done with the Ravens, or indeed McDermott, what he's done with the Bills. So to have that kind of consistency over a length of time and to see that success return for Belichick in the way that it has, I'd love to see him get it for that reason.
Yeah, that's Matt Carlin in conversation with Ronan on The Snap this week. And as I said, you can go to otbsports.com/clubgridiron and we'll update you about all the goodness there. And by the way, stay tuned for a little bit later on today. Around about 10:30, we're going to be marking your card, JD. A quick preview of the weekend's games there. We're going to be marking your card for the five best games of the weekend that'll be available across the Sky platform. It's the brand new football kickoff in partnership with Sky, and Ger will be coming your way. Simon Cox amongst his guests this morning. Coming your way in just under an hour's time. So stay tuned to OTB channels for all of that. Also want to let you know about, while I'm at it, a brand new podcast series. It's called Best of Frenemies with Dermot and Dave. And as always, thanks to Heineken, and a brand new podcast series celebrating the best of sporting rivalries on and off the pitch. The first episode includes none other than Ray Houghton and Dervla O'Rourke. So it's a brilliant cast. And they're going to speak about some of their fiercest rivalries. It also features a behind-the-scenes look at Bohemians as two sporting rivals obviously go head-to-head in a quick-fire battle. There, you can subscribe to Best of Frenemies wherever it is that you get your podcast. You can check out Today FM's social channels as well to find out much more on that. And it's all with thanks to Heineken, who are proud partners of the Heineken Champions Cup and the UEFA Champions League. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Get the facts. Be drink aware. And you can visit drinkaware.ie. It's almost it from us for this morning. We still have a bit of John Giles goodness coming your way. It is O2B AM and we're with you since 7:30 this morning, as we are every morning, weekday morning. And Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. Thanks very much for joining us for the show this morning and all during the week as well. We've had a brilliant week and a brilliant show for you this morning. Hannah Turb was joining us in studio for the first time as co-host and did an absolutely cracking job, and we'll definitely have her back again. She had lots of interesting stuff in the conversations that we had with herself and also with Ronan O'Gara, Alan Brogan, Yvonne Gabriel of Build, on Ralph Rignick and Ralph Ragnick and JD's football brief as well. If you missed any of that, you can catch it all back in the O2B Sports app. That's also where you're going to find our radio tab. Now you can get sports in your ears all day long. What more would you need? Stay tuned to Off the Ball. We've a brand new football show, as I mentioned, coming your way 10:30 this morning. John is going to bring you OTB Saturday tomorrow as well from 1 o'clock. Brilliant Saturday panel and Football Saturday lined up as well with that.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.